Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the pound-for-pound best radio show around the world, it's Leave It In the Ring.
Welcome everybody to Leave It In The Ring. I know it's been a while. We didn't have a show last week, but now we're back and we're back on track. And I first thought, before we even start the show, I want to start introducing our new co-host for Max Boxing, Gabriel Montoya. Gabriel, what's up, brother? How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. You know, and a matter of fact, before I start getting it, and I forget about it, we did get tons and tons of emails of the fans' reactions of you joining Leave It In The Ring. So I don't have time. We don't have all day to read out all of them, but I'll read out at least three or four of them. One from Juan, I'll read like three or four emails that were sent to Leave It In The Ring about your you making your debut on Leave It In The Ring, which really, I don't know if it's, you can call it a debut. Yes, I mean, literally now you're a co-host, but you've been on the show plenty of times. Right.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I've been on. I think I've been on like five times, maybe.
Exactly.
And yeah. Usually over. You know, I kind of stay for a long time anyway, so it kind of made sense to me. You know.
Absolutely. You know, and so one fan, Juan, he said, "Gabriel, welcome to Leave It In The Ring. Best writer joins the best radio show. Congratulations."
Wow. Thank you, man. Nice to hear.
Theo Villard. I hope I'm saying that correctly. Out of the UK. Gabriel, glad to hear you're joining Leave It In The Ring. Wish you the best of luck.
Cool. Well, you know, hopefully I won't ramble too much and I'll do that for the guy.
Ramon Cockin, I hope I'm pronouncing the last name, Ramon, out of Sacramento, California. The ring gets better and better, and now it's even greater with Max Boxing, Gabriel Montoya. So there we
cool.
go. Amber Jimenez, New York, congratulations, Gabriel. Wish you the best of luck with Leave It In The Ring.
I always like to hear from a female fan, you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Bradley Price out of Maywood, California. Gabriel, been following your stories, read all your articles, and now I get to hear the man behind the page. Congratulations.
Awesome. I need to get out to that gym a little more often, so I'm actually feeling some guilt hearing from somebody from Maywood. I keep telling them I'm going to come. I've only been out, like, I think twice. So, dude, I'll be out to your gym, and I'll be writing about your area very soon.
Well, anyway, so let's go right into the show. We do have a lot of stuff to cover. We have a couple guests that are going to be coming through. We got Robert the Ghost Guerrero, who's going to be calling in his shirt for you right now to discuss his fight coming up in Las Vegas. You know, he had to cancel his fight with Michael Casillas, but now he's back on track on his fight coming up in Las Vegas at the Tropicana Hotel and Casino. Then we got King David Estrada calling in about 6:15 to talk about his sensational win under over a undefeated fighter, Lara. And then after that, we have an MMA fighter by the name of Hike. I'm going to try to pronounce his last name. It's Armenian. It's I'm thinking it's Tucson. Okay, and he's got a fight coming up in Hollywood. So we got a lot of good stuff. Then we got to talk about a little bit about David A. and Latimer Klitschko, about Latimer Klitschko's video, that newly video that he dropped, and I believe it was on April 13 or 11 or something like that, and calling out David Hay. It seems like now finally David Hay has gotten even deeper into his skin, Gabriel.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, when you can make a European guy use the term bitched out, you know, on a regular basis, you know you've made him pretty angry, you know. I think that's why I think he's just had enough, you know. It's like, dude, quit calling my name. Sign the contract. Let's get it done. I think it's going to be a great fight. You know, what's interesting, though, is that this emailer just hit me, and I'm writing my bag as we're doing this. And you know, Hay is looking out for the WBC belt a little more. I think he, you know, this guy brings up that Hay might match up a little bit better with the slower Vitaly, and I kind of tend to agree with him a little bit. I still think Vitaly can beat him, But, you know, if he's going to hit and move and not really try to engage for very long, I think the guy to go with is Vitaly. Because Vlad is a fast, athletic dude. He throws good combinations. And, you know, I think he's a little pissed off. And that might actually get him out of his envelope, which may not be a good thing for Vlad. But It also could be like Lennox Lewis when he fought Rockman that second time, when he's just an angry 6'5 dude with speed and power, you know.
Absolutely.
That's a guy you want to make mad. So I'm looking forward to it. I hope he fights one of them.
Definitely. You know, I know we got our co-host 916 out of Sacramento, and we got Strikeheart on the line, guys. How you doing, fellas?
I'm good.
I'm doing pretty good. I wasn't having the best today, but I just got finished watching Strikeheart's new video, so I feel much better.
I heard about the new video about Jim Lampe. You were talking about Jim Lampe. I haven't watched it, though. After the show, I'm definitely going to sit down and pop open a beer and sit down and relax and see what you got to say there, Strike.
Yeah. I had a little bit of a busy day as far as videos go. I did that one, and then I was the third one to jump on the dog pile of Smitty too. So I think that's in the processing stage.
Well, you know, definitely, the whole Latimer Calisco and David Hay feud is out there, and I got tons and tons of mail, and we're gonna address it, because a lot of fight fans from the UK sent down a lot of email about. I guess, yeah, I'm not saying it's a question. They're trying to straighten us out. I gotta say, I mean, they're trying to straighten us out on some of the things that we said. But I gotta back up what I said, and I've always said this before. I've never said I'm 100% in what I say. I am 97%. Mostly right in what I say. So there is 3% chance I am going to be wrong. Hey, no problem, you know. And we are going to, you know, we're going to address it, like I said. But, you know, before we even do that, you know, before we even get into that, last week there was been a lot of news. We've missed out, you know. Andre Berto gets in with Carlos Quintana. Successful over Carlos Quintana. He stops him on a TKO on the 8th round. But, you know, watching that fight, Gabriel and Strike and Chris, I have to say – out of watching that whole thing, I'm still not completely sure if Berto is really a champion quality at this time. He seems like a contender and in working progress, you know. I can't see him stepping in with Manny Pacquiao. I can't see him stepping in with, Mosley or Mayweather at the moment. I can see him stepping in with Joshua Calati, or I could see him waiting for a junior lightweight fighter out there by the name of Timothy Bradley, who has had his fight postponed, maybe move up in challenging him. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I'm not even going to give him enough credit that he could step in with Clotty. That's how much I haven't yet to be impressed with Andre Berto. The only thing impressive about him, other than his personality and his backstory, he's a great guy. I'm not taking away anything from his character, but he's really only got speed and heart. I mean, but what boxer doesn't? If you don't have heart, you might as well just quit already. So I'm just not impressed. He just shows that he's got flaws coming out the yin-yang. You don't really even want to get into him because you're going to be talking for 15 minutes. He's fast, and that's all I see.
Gabriel?
Tommy Kimmins really helped him, you know, a lot in that fight, too. I will say that Tommy Kimmins should be given an assist on that win.
I think I'd put him in with Josh Clotty because I hear Andre's really good on a heavy bag. But, you know, I think, you know, he's got flaws, and it's the title system, you know, where guys can pick up a belt. I mean, he's got Floyd Mayweather's vacant WBC belt. That's the belt he has. You know, he's also got Floyd Mayweather's same advisor, Al Haymon, and that's why he has the belt that he has. And in a sense, it's a way of protecting him. He doesn't have to deal with all the other champions because he's got a belt, and he's not going to get ranked as a mandatory. So he's kind of on an island, on a safe island. You know, they can have guys move up. The WBC is corrupt as corruption, you know, as bad as corruption could be, like, you know, the 20s in Chicago or our government now. And, you know, so he can do whatever he wants with the WBC and kind of keep that belt. In terms of his fight game, he's very flawed. You know, doesn't really have much of an inside game. He doesn't really have a mid-range game too much. He's got a long-range game, which plays to his speed and his athleticism. I don't think the chin is all that great. You could see Quintana hurting him throughout the fight.
Right.
And then, like you said, he had Tommy Kimmins helping him out the whole time. But I do think that he's definitely a top caliber kind of guy in terms of potential. I just don't think they've developed him very well. They've kind of looked for guys to mask his flaws as opposed to guys that could develop him as a fighter.
Yeah, but Gable, isn't that something very common now in boxing? Right now, since the late 90s, it doesn't seem like they're allowing these younger fighters to develop into champions. It seems like boxing now is no longer a sport. It's become a business. So in the business sense, it's let's make a champion so that we can get pay-per-view buys and we can get people to come and sell out an arena when really – are these guys that supposedly are supposed to have a championship belt, are they quality champions for people to want to go, okay, let's clap our hands now because this guy has proven himself? So is it Berto's fault?
No, it's not Berto's fault. You can't blame the fighter. I almost never really can blame the fighter unless they get into that kind of stratosphere, sort of like, a Pacquiao or Oscar or, even Mayweather, where they get to kind of pick and choose, and they're kind of above the belts at a certain point. Like, all those guys, it doesn't really matter, title shots. But it's always been this way. You think back to the 40s, 50s, and 60s when the mob ran boxing. In Raging Bull, the first fight that we see him in, or later on when he's supposed to throw the fight against Billy Fox. Mm-hmm. And Billy Fox was nobody, but they wanted him to have a win over LaMotta so that he could increase his gait so they could make more money off of him. And instead, Billy Fox had no chin, and he had to be carried by LaMotta throughout the whole fight, and it was ugly, and he lost his license for a while because of it. It's the same thing now. It's just I think we notice it more because guys fight less because there's fewer dates on HBO, so it's a
Absolutely.
Little more blatant when there's a product,
Absolutely. Don't want to get too deep into that. I do want to go back on the subject because I like to hear Chris's opinion about it. But I do want to speak about a fighter that is going to get back into the ring April 30th at the Tropicana Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas. You got Robert the Ghost Guerrero. Robert, do I have you on the line, brother?
Yeah, I'm here. How's it going?
I'm doing good, man. How's everything going with you? How's camp working out right now?
Camp's working out good. Training hard, making it happen.
Now, Robert, before we even continue the interview, I want to first send out my condolences to you, to your wife. I hope she's getting better. I hope everything's going good for you right now with the wife, Casey. How's progress going with her?
Everything's going great with her. I mean, she's on track to where she's supposed to be. She's doing excellent, as everybody can see. I'm getting back in the ring, so she's doing good. I couldn't be happier the way everything's going. God blessing her real good, and I'm excited about that.
Now, Robert, when your wife, obviously, you're a professional fighter, you're a prize fighter, and you take punches in the face for a living. But in some ways, Robert, could you say that the wife is a little bit tougher than you?
Nah, she is tough. I mean, what I have to go through is nothing compared to what she does. I look at it as what I do is it doesn't even put a hair on it. I mean, being through the whole process with her and watching all the different things she has to do, I mean, it's incredible to see how strong one person is.
Robert, how much does it affect you in training camp? I mean, your fight was supposed to be Michael Casitas, and then, this all of a sudden came along, which is really out of your hands, How much does it affect you? Even though you're saying she's doing well, at any moment, that can just switch automatically, right?
Oh, yeah. It's a very serious treatment she went through. I've done it before where she was in the hospital, going through the treatments of chemo and gone out and fought and beat guys, knocked guys out and came back with the victory. But this situation was just a whole lot different. The bone marrow transplant's a very serious thing where it could go bad, in a heartbeat. I just didn't feel real comfortable, being away from her. I wanted to be close by and being able to see for myself and not just, talk on the phone and just what everybody has to say. I wanted to be there to personally speak to the doctor and make sure that, that she also knows that I'm going to be next to her through the whole treatment and the whole process of the transplant. So, that support from me and, what was a huge deal, a part of her recovery. I mean, she, she was happy that I was there, and you know, I think it was one of the best decisions I made was to not go on with the fight and stay home and you know attend her. You know, also you know having her on my mind all the time on you know what can happen. I mean, it was difficult to even think about what I got to do in the ring. So you know, the decision was made, and you know, I'm happy with the decision I made.
We got Golden Boy Robert the Ghost Guerrero on the line with us on Leaving the Ring. He's got a fight coming up April 30th at Tropicana Hotel Casino in Las Vegas. Robert, I'd like to kind of go in a little bit about your opponent. Now, you know, I know a lot of fight fans are not really aware of the opponent that you're going to be stepping in the ring. Let me ask you this. Is this more of a fill-out type of bout for Golden Boy giving you, feeding you this fight? Because for Michael Casillas going to the new opponent, it's a big difference of class.
Yeah, you know, you know, I've been out of the ring for 8 months, going to be 8 months, and, you know, got to get that ring list off. You know, get back in the ring, break in, and, you know, start making that run at 135 pounds. You know, you know, it's going to be good. You know, they have a lot of confidence in me at 135, you know, coming off that fight at 130, winning the IBF Championship of the World. You know, I was ready to go. And it would have been perfect timing with the Casillas fight you know, making the move, being sharp and just coming off a good fight. But, you know, staying out an extra little longer, you know, they want to break me back in and then go from there.
So what are the plans if you're successful on April 30th? I mean, has there been another name brought to the table, a possible Michael Casillas or even, I don't know, I mean, what other name right now would be the best name for you at this moment?
Oh, man, I have to say Marquez. I mean, Marquez is the top dog at the weight. And, you know, he's the man there. And, you know, I want to get in the ring and show everybody around the world. Like, I was listening in on the radio show, and you were saying, you know, turn that respect. You know, they got to be those big fights. They got to get that marquee guy. And for right now, I feel in the hardweight class, it's Marquez. I mean, you know, he's been there, done it. He's fought Pacquiao. He's fought Mayweather. I mean, he's fought you name it. And you know, in order to be that big fighter and that big name, you know, you got to fight guys like that. And you know me, I'm that type of guy that will fight anybody. And, you know, I just want to make some big fights. And you know, the fans deserve it. The fans deserve a fighter that's not going to duck and run or pick and choose. He's going to fight everybody.
You know, I know you and your father and your brother, man, and I, you know, how are they doing? First off, how's your dad and Ruben and your brother Ruben and your younger brother doing?
They're doing great. I mean, everybody's doing good. Everybody's excited. You know, everybody's happy. Everybody's happy that you know, everything's going good now and everything's starting to level out and you know, boxing's coming back up and you know, we're all excited. We're all fight fans and you know, we love the sport of boxing, so everybody's excited that we're back in the game.
Now, you know, talking about Marquez, you know, you're having your fight and, you know, Ring Rust, you just mentioned it's Ring Rust. And like you just mentioned, you have to fight the marquee names to get that respect. But Robert, let me ask you this. If you get past this guy and the Ring Rust is there, you obviously got to shake it off. Is it the smartest thing to do to go up against a Juan Manuel Marquez on a second fight? I mean, this is a completely different a level of championship, right?
Yeah, it's a big difference. You know, I'm ready. I'm ready to go, and you know, the fight is just getting back in the ring and you know, getting the ball, start campaigning at 35, and you know, I say it's more dusting off the cobwebs, not ring rust, it's dusting the cobwebs. So. You know, I'm excited. I'm excited about you know, the next fight. And you know, I got to take care of business. First things first, take care of business on the 30th, and, you know, go from there. But I I did want to get in right away with a big name and lift rock and roll, but you know, it's a promotional management job to make the fight, and you know, this is the fight that they proposed, and you know, let's do it. Like I said, I fight anybody and anywhere. So I mean, I'm happy I'm getting back in the ring.
I'm going to pass it on to my co-host, Gable Montoya. Gable, do you have any questions for Robert the Ghost Guerrero?
I do. How are you, Robert? Nice to talk to you
again. All right. How you doing, Gable?
I'm doing good, man. I'm curious, you know, this whole situation, everything that's gone on with your wife, initially getting the cancer and then the remission and going through all this process, how much has it put into perspective the world of boxing, your career? What has that done to change your perspective just on life in general?
Oh, man, it's done a lot. I mean, you can't take anything for granted. You know, being so young, my wife, she got diagnosed. She was 25 years old. And, I mean, you can't take anything for granted. And the cancer that she has is a blood cancer. It's a leukemia. So, you know, it occurs in a lot of children. And that's what affected me more is knowing that young children get this more than anybody else. So, you know, it really makes you, being a father myself, I mean, it really makes you, really, really makes you think about life and you know, and have a soft spot for, you know, for everybody out there. And you know, I'm happy that you know, I get the opportunity to you know, raise awareness for leukemia and cancer, being in my shoes, you know, fighting in front of the whole world and having millions of fans around following, you know, you're able to raise awareness for that and you know, shed some light on the subject and you know, hopefully it could spark some minds to go out there and be a donor or you know, be a blood donor and give somebody else a chance of life. So I mean, it's you know, it's nice to be in my shoes right now.
Nice. Now, I'm curious. Now, you've had a few start and stops due to this. I mean, obviously, family and your wife is more important than anything on the planet. But you've had some start and stops, and I'm curious, is there a frustration there? Have you been able to stay in the gym? Have you been able to shake some of the rust off, or have you just kind of stepped out and just been at your wife's side this whole time?
No, I've been in the gym the whole time. You know, it's very therapeutic for me to just go into the gym, you know, a couple of days out of the week and just let it go. I mean, the stress and you know, just everything that's built up, you know, it's nice to go in the gym and just let it go on the bag and be in my comfort zone. I mean, that's where I'm comfortable at the most, is being in the center of the ring. And I mean, it really, really helps out when I would go in that gym and just give a good hard workout and make me feel good after, you know, a hard day of, you know, the wife getting treatment or just, you know, being back and forth. You know, it helped out a lot. It helped out a lot. And, you know, it also kept me in pretty decent shape to be able to bounce back and get back in the ring. So, I mean, like I said, it's basically just dusting off the cobwebs. So, you know, I'm happy that you know, I was able to go into the gym and just let it go every once in a while.
Have you had a chance to watch this guy, any tape of him? Do you even do that? Does that matter to you? Or are you just listen to the trainer and go in there and take care of your game plan?
Oh, yeah. I've went online and watched some stuff. You know, you can't take anybody light or overlook anybody. Anybody that gets in the ring is dangerous, especially when you know, they're coming up against a Golden Boy fighter or a Shelly Finkel fighter. It's like fighting for a title. I mean, you know, it's your chance. It's your chance to get recognized, and you know, it's like fighting for a world championship. You can get your shot. So, you know, I've seen it in a number of fighters that have overlooked somebody, and you know, the guy crept up and you know, like a snake in the weeds, just crept up and bit you in the leg. So, you know, you gotta always be on it in boxing, and one punch can change everything. So, you know, I've been watching a little bit of YouTube clips on him, you know, getting a feel of his style and you know, dialing in on you know, a lot of stuff that we could capitalize on. So, You know, he's a tough guy. I mean, you know, all guys that get in the ring and that could go, I mean, you know, you got to be prepared for.
Nice. Thank you, man. We pass it back to Dave.
We got Robert the Ghost Guerrero, Golden Boy Robert the Ghost Guerrero. He's got a fight coming up April 30th at Tropicana Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas. I'm going to pass it on to my co-host, Justin Strikehart. Strikehart, you have any questions for the Ghost?
Yeah, I got a few questions for you, Robert. Let me begin by taking us back a little more than a year ago. You fought a guy named Dowd Jordan, who just fought Caballero this past week. When you fought him, there was a bit of controversy, you know, with the accidental headbutts, which eventually stopped the fight. And a lot of people had questioned you as far as your heart goes, including Max Kellerman, you know, on live television. Can you just go back and relive that moment and explain especially how it made you feel when your heart was questioned after the fact?
Oh, you know, it was you know, going back to that fight and looking at the whole picture and then, you know, all the questions, you know, it gets you pumped up. I mean, it gets you pumped and it makes you want to go out there and go to war and just start blasting on guys and just trucking through guys. But, you know, my father looked at it as, hey, you know what? You just in the ring. You got to go out there, be smart in the ring. You know, watch out for headbutts. You can't just go and start trucking through guys because then that's how you start getting butted and everything. So, you know, we started working on our game more, as you've seen in the last October fight. I mean, the last fight in August on HBO for the IBF Championship of the World. You know, went out there and put on an excellent boxing display and you know, fired over 1,200 punches in the fight. You know, it... What it did is just made me go out there and work even more hard and want to get even better and sharper. So you know, nothing like that ever happens again. You know, it was heartbreaking to hear. You know, after you win. I mean, all these fights previous to that, knocking everybody out. For them to say, oh, the quitter and this and that, and you know, it's tough, but you know, you can't let stuff like that break you down. You just got to keep on trucking, and that's what I did, and you know, came back and won the world title, and you can see the difference in your dad.
Right.
Your dad just got destroyed, you know, last week on HBO, and you know, it just shows it was one of those things, and you know, too bad it wasn't me that got to get in there with him and do it. But, you know, a matter of time, you know, time tells everything, and you can see who is the more talented fighter.
Uh-huh. It was a bit surprising, though, to see Jordan take the beating that he took. Would you consider staying around 130 so you can be the first one to put him out, knock him out all the way?
I'm moving to 35. You know, there's a lot of big things at 35, so, you know, I'm excited about that. You know, it's nice. You know, he did take a beating, though. I mean, I give him the credit. You know, he hung in there tough, and you know, to see how many body shots he took, you know, he was in incredible shape. He came ready to go, and you know, it was just too bad that, you know, he just got outscored and outpunched and outclassed.
Yeah, if he had a better corner, he might be somebody to be excited about. The reason why I brought that fight up, though, on a personal note, is because I stuck my neck out pretty far 6 or 8 months ago at this point when Nate Campbell had a very similar situation come up with the headbutt and all the questions surrounding it afterwards. Did you see that fight, and did you have any personal feelings on that headbutt and a similar situation?
You know what? I did not get to see that fight, and, you know,
was a must to see.
Yeah, it was
Robert,
about maybe
hey, Robert,
12
like
seconds longer than yours, so yeah.
hey, Robert, there wasn't much to see, bro.
Yeah, it was just more of all those same questions came up, but you know, Nate, with a mouth like his, it got amplified so much more. You know, that situation did not go away as quickly as yours did. So... I guess you don't have a whole lot to say on that, seeing as how you didn't actually see the fight. So I'll just move off of that and ask you, as soon as you brought up Marquez's name, I immediately thought, you know, you were on quite a knockout streak before Klaassen, who did go all the way with you. But, you know, you had taken a lot of decisions earlier in your career, and then you started knocking everybody out. So when you fight Marquez, if that happens, would you go for a knockout, or would you just be more concerned with winning in general?
I mean, with Marquez, you got to be more concerned in winning because, you know, he's one of the master technicians in the ring, and if you go to try to knock him out, he'll just pick you apart. And, you know, you got to come with a game plan to beat Marquez. I mean, look at him. I mean, he was in there with Pacquiao twice, and Pacquiao just blasted on everybody, couldn't even knock him out. I mean, he's a very intelligent fighter, and you know, you got to come game and ready to go. I mean, at all ends. And you know, if the knockout comes, that's the way you got to look at it. If the knockout comes, you know, it's there. But you know, other than that, you got to come ready for 12 rounds with Marquez and ready to fight hard.
Uh huh. Agreed. Another name that pops right now at 135.
Don't get me wrong. I mean, I would love to get the knockout against him. I mean, you know, it'd be a first it'd be nice. But you know, you got to come ready.
Yeah, you'll have to convince him not to take that rematch with Juan Diaz. That's what needs to happen, because I'm personally uninterested in that rematch. But that's a whole other subject. I was just gonna say. Another name that pops in the division right now is Edwin Valero. Would you have any interest in taking that challenge on?
Oh, yeah. I would love to fight Edwin Valero. I mean, you know, he is a tough, strong fighter. I mean, he comes crazy, but, you know, with the proper boxing skills, I think you could run him into shots all night long. And, you know, I would love that fight. I would love that fight, and you know, it's a matter of time where he's going to get in with somebody that knows how to box and that somebody that got some torque in the tank and that can rip some shots. You know, it's a matter about you know, setting it up and letting him fire. I mean, I would love that shot. I would love to shot at that fight if it was to come up.
It sounds like it. I will just say on a personal note, you know, like almost everybody in America these days, I've had a lot of cancer in my family and dealt with that, so. My heart goes out to you, and I wish for the best. So I'll pass it back to Dave. Good luck.
Hey, thank you.
We got Robert the Ghost Guerrero on Leaving the Ring. He's got his comeback fight at the Tropicana Casino and Hotel, April 30th. Robert, hey, brother, it's always a pleasure, man, when you come through on Leaving the Ring. I can't wait to see you get back in there and do your craft. And hopefully you get one of the names that was mentioned today on the show.
Oh, yeah, hopefully, you know, hopefully after this fight, it's one of the names, and, you know, I'm excited. I can't wait.
All right, brother, you take it easy, man. I'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Robert. Dave, you have a good day.
You too. Well, there you go. We got Robert the Ghost Guerrero that just came on through real quick. If you didn't have a chance to listen to the whole entire interview, you can go back on the archives later on the show when the show ends. It takes about an hour or two. You know, really, really, really quick, a good friend of ours from Leaving the Ring, a fighter's making his pro debut. Livingston's making Donnell Livingston's making a pro debut over there in Hollywood, California. It's actually on May 6th. The card involves some boxing and MMA. It's King of the West presents Rage Against the Ropes, powered by Pit Bull. Like I said, May 6th, the card does involve some boxing and MMA. It's at the Circus Disco, 6655 Santa Monica Boulevard, Hollywood, California. So you might want to go and check it out. You're going to have Joseph Buda out there, you know, fighting on the undercard, and then Donnell Livingston, and a guest that's going to be coming on at 7:30, Hike, who's an MMA fighter. To go get your tickets, go to www.kingofthewest.com, or you can call 818-314-9705 for ticket info. So be sure to support Donnell Livingston. Anyways, we got to take a quick break. And then when we come back, we should have some time to talk a little bit about what's going on in the boxing world. We got some fights coming up. Sergio Martinez versus Cali Pavlik. Lucian Bute versus Edison Miranda. And then we got our stand and fight rundown news that we need to chop it up and do. We got to play catch up. And then we got to talk about a little bit about Ladder Klitschko and David Haye. Then after that, We do need to put up on air because there was some heated moments at the press conference, telepress conference between Chris the Nightmare Oriella and Kathy Duva, the promoter of Atomic. So we have some good stuff here on Leaving the Ring. So right now, we're gonna take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Coming up, I was confused, my mama kissing the girl. Confusion occurs coming up in the cold world. Daddy ain't around, probably out committing felonies. My favorite rapper used to sing, check out my melody. I wanna live good, shit, I sell dope for a four-finger ring. One of them gold ropes, Santa told me if I pass, I get a sheepskin coat. If I can move a few packs, I get the hat. Now that'd be dope, toast and turned in my sleep that night. Woke up the next morning, niggas just stole my bike. Different day, same shit, ain't nothing good in the hood. I run away from this bitch and never come back if I could. Baby, the love is the underdogs on top. And I'm gon' shine, homie, until my heart stops. Go ahead, MVP. I'm Rash MVP, and I ain't going nowhere. Shit, you get to know me. Baby, the love is the underdogs on top. And I'm gon' shine, homie, until my heart stops. Go ahead, MVP. I'm Rash MVP, and I ain't going nowhere. I'll give you something to think about. Come round me fighting, I'll air you out. I go out.
I don't shoot shit up, dog, I gun it down. Walk up on niggas and run them down. Pull a stock out the cage, throw 100 rounds. Won't stop till your box lowered underground. Put you in the urn, your bones will burn. A rap gorilla, the whack rap, rainbow killer. I'm here. Find a nigga equally real is rare. You can meet me in the square if you dare to come near. I have no morals. It's a whole lot of clicks and a dick for you. Bullets and a clip for you. It's the ignorance. At least it looks that way when you witness it. Kill all witnesses. Bury the hatchet. Matter of fact, bury the casket. Kill niggas. Bury the ration. Pick it back up if I have to. I used to bump niggas and punch niggas out for practice. The shit started. The shit finished. I don't know what's harder. When they release you, when they sit and shit. The realness. Back like I promised. Ready to dig a nigga shit like a salami.
I'm more intelligent from last time, remember them. They can't believe we back up in the club. We can be sipping on that Henny. My bitch is just a chili. You fuck with me, I'm gon' let it all. I go off. I'm finna feel like it's legal. A nigga move around with the eagle. I go off. When you get it, we don't believe you. This is just sitting being a seagull. I go off.
Big pop, other prop on deck. Massage to LVs on the spec. My gooch low slide up the ground when I set. Beat it, your kid ain't mine, I contest. Aim above net, the best cover the set, the pie cover the head. Lay top, I don't rock with the top. Horse with the stick in the hand of the jock. Everyday gear that I wear on the block. Can you picture me rolling?
See clear like pop.
Who want beef with Big Papa? Fill a thousand deaths when I drop ya. I feel for you like Shaka Khan, I'm the dime. Make niggas talk through the wire like time. A trip to the mall, turn the duck to a dime. You catch me on my shit, duck to a grind. On the miss, trying to turn a buck out of dime. In the kitchen, trying to turn a fuck out of nine. Nigga, listen, I earned every buck that was mine. I ain't never cry over fucking dime. Make it go on,
I'm
go on.
From last time, remember them. They can't believe we back up in the club. We could be sipping on that Henny. And my bitch, you get to see me. You fuck with me, I'm gon' let it all. I go off.
Well, you know the rest. Humpty Dumpty sat on the wall with a joint, drinking some 8-ball. Three little pigs in a coupe de ville, looking for the wolf to kill. That fucked up and they want revenge. Them and Humpty used to be friends. Now they're enemies cause he's a traitor. Pulled out the Uzi Cruz ride and sprayed him. Cinderella hoeing for the fellas. And Mr. Rogers is getting mighty jealous of the cash that the pigs were making. Time for the pigs to get turned to bacon. Cause Mr. Rogers found out quick that Humpty Dumpty was blown to bits. They said that the motherfucking wolf was next. So Mr. Rogers better watch his step. So he let the wolf know. We're gonna fuck up the pigs and take their hoe. Cause Cinderella is much too fast. Before 12, giving up ass. Double barrels all loaded and cocked. As soon as they shove, they gonna get popped. They bail down Sesame Street in quarters. Little boy Blue was up front giving orders. Little did they know Cinderella was a freak. She called the cops and got thrown in the crate. A bad influence, yo, I don't know. Ice Cube would tell the kids how the story should go. Hey, yo, man, was that dope enough for you?
Yeah, you are.
Whoop your little bad ass.
Some bedtime story.
David, you've bestowed on...
We're back on Leaving the Ring. So anyways, you know what? I want to address a little bit about the whole David Haye. If you guys didn't have a chance to listen to it, I will replay it before I do get into it, because we did get tons and tons of email out there to Leaving the Ring about some things that we had talked about. You know, me, Gabriel, and Chris916, and I also did a video and dropped it on YouTube. So let me replay what I came up with so people, if you haven't had a chance to go to YouTube and listen what Latimer Klitschko, the champion Latimer Klitschko, had to say about David Haye.
I'm Vladimir Klitschko, and I want to send this message to the boxing fans around the world. I'm Vladimir Klitschko, and I want to send this message to the boxing fans around the world. David, and directly to David Haye. And directly to David Haye. You missed out on fighting Vladimir Klitschko, and I want to send this message to the boxing fans around the world. David, I'm Vladimir Klitschko, and I want to send this message to boxing fans around the world. You've missed out on fighting both the Klitschko brothers twice already. Now's the time to make it happen. David, you've missed out on fighting both the Klitschko brothers twice already. Now's the time to make it happen. So, on behalf of the boxing fans around the world, I'm officially calling you out to fight. David, you can't run away from me forever, and you need to follow through with this fight to get respect. I'm ready. What are you waiting for?
What are you waiting for? Yeah, I don't know, Gabriel. I can't seem to get tired of hearing that all the time. I love it, you know?
David, you've been stalled on...
You know what I'm saying?
I'm not mistaken, Dave. That background music is from the 1979 Walter Hill film, The Warriors.
The Warriors.
And it's basically saying to David, hey, you know, come out and play. Let's
come out and then, hey, you know what, Gabriel? I'm glad that you caught on to that one there, because that's exactly why I put that little sound back in the back there, was Warriors come out to play, you know. And in other words, David, you know, what did he say?
David, you've bestowed on...
Yeah. I can't see, and I know some David Haye fans are going to get upset, and you know, oh, you're a David Haye hater. I'm not a David Haye hater. I don't think Americans are David Haye haters and stuff, and I got plenty of emails about what we had to say, and really honestly, I think a lot of people took what we were talking about way overboard, okay? Let me refresh everybody what we were talking about. A lot of UK fans and even the commentators were making a big hoot about David Haye beating a 37-year-old John Ruiz. My opinion on it was big deal, okay? John Ruiz, first off, was not a prime fighter. It's never been a major threat in the heavyweight division. Okay, and the guy, really honestly, the guy he's been knocked out in a lot quicker fashion by David Tua, who to me has less boxing skills than David Haye, and my complaint was David Haye was doing a lot of rabid punching, and I had said a guy with a lot of athleticism that he has and he carries in speed and power, he didn't need to revert into doing dirty tactics like that. If he would have kept it to the outside, he could have got the job done fast. Now, people said, oh, you know, you're hating on him because he pulled out of the fight. He didn't pull out of the fight because of the stipulations that the Klitschko brothers had against him. Look, I understand all that. I understand everything that what you guys are talking about. I got your emails about, you know, the whole rundown between the UK TV deal that he had with Sinana. I understand all that. I knew of all that stuff. But my point was this. He said yes. He agreed to those terms. Okay? Then leading into the fight, he had a back injury. Now, he wanted to postpone it for 2 to 3 weeks. I understand all that. Latimer Klitschko, though, at the time, being champion, said, hey, I've been working my ass off to get to this point. You know what? I'm not going to hold off. I'm going to continue get in the ring. Okay? And at the process of him getting in the ring, David Haye decides to get in with the giant, Ballou, and takes the title belt. Now, He's got to make a mandatory challenge. I understand that. And, yes, it was going to be the first time in his whole soil and where he's from. I understand it as well. But in my opinion, and this is my opinion, that's not the opinion of all the Leaving the Ring guys. Is in my opinion, okay, you want to defend it, but defend it on your soil that has not been defended for how many years? That's all great and dandy, but wasn't the main goal, since you're saying you're going to retire at the age of 31, is to get one of the Klitschkos, both of the Klitschkos, to unify the title. That's all I was saying. I wasn't hating on what he's doing. I'm not hating on what he can do. But there's a lot of fight fans right now that are on David Haye saying that he has accomplished something he hasn't done yet, which is gather all the bouts. Let's wait until he does that. How can you call a man great when he has not done none of the things that you guys are predicting? That was my whole complaint about what some of you guys were sending me emails about. I didn't say he couldn't do it. I just said I want to see it happen, and I'm tired of the boxing politics. That's all. I want to see great fights. Go for it, Gabriel.
Absolutely. You know, I think, one, you know, we can just throw out the whole idea that he's going to quit at 31. You know, if he quits, it's because he gets knocked the hell out by somebody and doesn't want anymore. But until he gets done with his business with the Klitschkos, he's not going to retire. It's going to take him a little bit of time to get that done, I think. He's probably going to have to fight, you know, he's going to fight the mandatory, then maybe a Klitschko, get knocked the hell out, retool, you know, and then kind of get back in line and try to go after the other Klitschko, maybe one that he can beat, maybe Vitaly. But, you know, I think Ruiz was not a bad challenge. You know, if you look back at the last guy who was the undisputed cruiserweight champion of the world, like David Haye just was, that would be Evander Holyfield.
Gabriel, the only thing is this, is John Ruiz has made his career for the last couple of years on losing to much smaller men. So how is this such a big deal? I mean, he lost to James Toney. He lost to Roy Jones.
It's part of the process. I mean, Ruiz has only lost by knockout twice, and that was his last fight with Haye. And I agree with you; those are rabid punches. They were terrible. And if we were living in a perfect world, he would have been disqualified for all three of those knockdowns that changed the course of the fight. They were illegal punches. And you know, I have a few things. I'm going to try to not go on too much of a tangent. One, it's not 1993. Let's throw the word hater out into the street along with pound for pound and all the sanctioning bodies. Set it on fire and let traffic just run over it until it's gone. Because, I mean, we're all haters, we're all huggers. I mean, you know, you don't ever see Yankee fans, Dodger fans, or Yankee fans and Red Sox fans argue with each other and say, you're a hater. No, you're a hater. You're a hugger. No, they're Yankee fans and they're Boston Red Sox fans, and that's about it. You know, we're boxing fans. We're a fan of one guy a lot of times. I mean, my favorite guy is James Kirkland. He's not fighting right now. That's probably the only guy that you'll see me kind of think that he'll beat anybody. Everybody else, I'm not a fan of them. I'm a pro-boxing person. You know, I'm a fan of boxing. So just the fact that we can criticize somebody, that's kind of my job. That's what I do
exactly.
for a living.
Exactly.
Just throw all that nationalism out the window. I love it. Be boxing fans. Love your guy. Support your guy. But don't write me in saying I'm a bigot. I hate British people. You know, I mean, some of my favorite people are British people. Just get the hell out of here. I don't have any friends that are British people, but I do enjoy their comedy.
Absolutely. You know, and the thing, too, is this, is that, you know, David Haye went up to him at the airport, and that was great and exciting. Now, Klitschko does the same thing. I think it's great and exciting because it only gives us something to talk about in the heavyweight division.
David,
Manny Stewart said the same thing. He said, you know, when Haye came out with the T-shirt with his head cut off, with Vladimir's head cut off and that whole thing, Manny said, this is great for the sport. It gets people excited. Guys are talking trash. They actually want to fight. It's not like, you know, and I think since this is my debut, people are going to, in about a week, say, here he goes again talking about Floyd Mayweather. But I hate hearing about money. I really hate about hearing about, well, I got $70 million, and
right.
if he writes my checks and blah, blah, blah. I hate all that shit. Tell me that you're going to kill the guy. Tell me that you want to knock him the hell out. You're going to knock him in tomorrow, tear his ass out the frame, that you don't like him personally, that he insulted your mother, whatever it is. Don't talk about your paychecks and the contract stuff. I think it's the worst thing that ever happened to sports in general is the first day somebody reported how much somebody made for their sporting event. I hate all that shit. Just tell me when they're fighting. Tell me that they hate each other, and let's get it on. You know. But as far as John Ruiz, you know, he's faced a hell of a lot of guys, and he's had a really difficult style after he got knocked out by David Tua in 18 seconds, you know, back in the day. I think this is all just part of David Haye's maturation as a heavyweight. It's his fourth heavyweight title, or heavyweight fight, his first defense of his title. You know, Holyfield fought, Pinklin Thomas, James Tillis, Michael Dokes, Adelson Rodriguez, who I've never heard of, Alex Stewart, Seamus McDonough, yet another guy, I have no idea who he is, and then he fought for the title against Buster Douglas, which was a winnable fight for him. There's a certain process that you've got to go through when you're moving up in weight and kind of moving along toward a heavyweight title. And I think John Ruiz is every bit the kind of a opponent that you should have to fight.
No, you know what? I agree.
Guy that
I,
you can beat.
Gabriel, I completely agree with you. But when you start jumping off by saying he can beat the Kaliskos because what he did to John Ruiz, then
right.
You know what? Come on, let's not get too far ahead of each other.
Let's put that
okay?
in perspective for a quick second here. There was a guy just a while ago, Juan Carlos Gomez, who moved up from cruiserweight. He did the whole thing where he worked his way up. He beat an old Oliver McCall, and then 6 months later, he got knocked out by Vitali Klitschko. So before we start, you know, parading David Haye around on our shoulders, let's see if he can actually do it first. I mean, he hasn't even gotten in the ring yet. He had two chances, one with each brother, and he said, no, I don't want to do that. And so I don't know why you can't criticize a guy. I don't care what country you live in. And to call any of us nationalists, or even the fact that we would agree on things, I mean, how often do we argue on this show about American boxers? So
absolutely,
give me a break. And on the whole James Kirkland side of things, I'm glad to hear you're a huge fan because so am I. So when he gets out of prison, we can both do the dance of joy.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't wait, man. We have plenty of time to get to him. But, you know, with Haye, though, I think what people get so excited is because you look at all that the crop of heavyweights. They've had some pretty big guys that have gone in against the Klitschkos recently, Kevin Johnson being one. And I actually think that, you know, I haven't even fought a Klitschko, and I've actually tried harder to beat a Klitschko than he did in that fight. You know, he was just horrible. And you look at David Haye, and he's got speed, he's got athleticism, he's got a hell of a mouth on him.
Absolutely.
He's exciting, you know, and I think if anybody does have a shot, it is him. You know, I think he's definitely flawed as a fighter. I personally think he's going to get knocked out by Vladimir and go the distance and lose against Vitali. Although that's, I think, a very much a 50-50 fight, maybe 55-45. But, you know, name me a heavyweight besides him that you think has a shot at those guys. It isn't Chris Arreola. He showed that. You know, maybe he can retool, but probably not. You know, is it Adamek? No. Povetkin? Maybe, but they obviously,
yeah.
they've been a mandatory for a while, and they're not pushing the issue. So
right.
What does that tell you? If
yeah.
David Haye, you know, and I think, you know,
and I think
yeah,
that's what people
misunderstand. Kind of screwed him.
Right, and I got to say this. You know, I think that's what a lot of David Haye fans confuse is that we're not complaining about what he did or what he's doing. We are complaining about the politics of boxing. So when you send us emails about the whole, you know, well, they only wanted to give him a certain amount of money. Hey, listen, I understand that. We understand that. We understand that boxing has been in a shambles for years and years and years because of money, okay? Fighters want 50-50. My whole thing is, just like Gable said a little while ago, we don't want to hear that no more. We want to hear the best fights being materialized, okay? Because I'll even read off one of the emails right now. You know, the email is, boxing is a business. It's not about legacy. You know whose fault that is? Our fault. Because you guys are – fight fans are now pretending that we cannot fix this. If we make a stand, we can fix all of this because who's paying these fighters to fight? We are. Why is it – when I hear this, if you make a criticism, you criticize a particular fighter, automatically it's right away, you know, well, boxing's a business. Well, then you know what? Then nobody should complain about what Floyd Mayweather does, period. Because obviously you're throwing your hands up in the air and you're settling what the guys in the suits are doing to us as fight fans, which is pretty much take our money and do whatever they want because they decide to give us the those garbage fights out there, Bernard Hopkins, Roy Jones, you know, number two. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I don't mean to pile on Floyd, so I won't. I'll pile on Manny Pacquiao for a second. You know, the Claudy fight, too. You know, and that did 700,000 pay-per-view buys. You know, Marquez versus Mayweather, which was more of a mismatch than Claudy versus Pacquiao. But, you know, that fight kind of reeked the Pacquiao fight because it was two house fighters fighting each other. But 700,000 pay-per-views for that Claudy fight. The Marquez fight did 1 million pay-per-view buys. Hey, man, you know, boxing fans, you're only encouraging them to give you more crap. Both of them combined had two of the worst undercards of all time. Horrible, boring fights that nobody wanted to ever see. And everybody bought them. Everybody knew going in what the deal was. And there are ways to, you know, go on pirate radio, you know, or pirate internet, steal the streams. There's a million ways to get around this. You know, it has been since the day cable TV was invented. And so there's no excuse to buy the crap that they sell us. But, you know, boxing fans are, they're like in an abusive relationship, you know. They take all this crap, they come back and say, but he really loves me. Someday he'll change, you know. And then they get screwed over yet again. And like you say, absolutely, they have the power. Don't buy the tickets. Steal the streams on the internet. Show the promoters. Hit them exactly where it counts, right in the wallet.
Exactly.
And then maybe it'll get better.
You know, there's that old saying, how do you hurt a rich man? Get him in his wallet. That's why you hurt a rich man. You know, as soon as that video came up from Vladimir Klitschko and his camp, Adam Booth, who is the trainer and business partner of David Haye, responded. Vladimir obviously really wants this fight, and that's fantastic because he generally wants to fight. Now the ball is in his court, okay, in their court. But he did mention David Haye. It says he wants to retire at 31. He wants to leave the division, you know, and undefeated. But he did mention Haye's camp wants 50-50. I don't know. Should he get it? Does he deserve it? And let's just say he gets the heavyweight titles away from the Klitschko brothers. Does he leave the division still in the state of not really sure who was the world champion?
Yeah, he's not really going to – if he does that, if he takes the title and retires, we're just kind of back to where we were, which was without a heavyweight. What I'm excited about with Vlad calling him out is that other than winning all this time, it's the first time I've seen him really act like the undisputed heavyweight champion of the world, and it's a beautiful thing. But I kind of look at the 50-50 thing kind of like when Floyd fought Oscar. Now, Floyd hadn't really broken, I don't think, 400,000 pay-per-views quite yet. Oscar, you know, averaged like, I think, 800 or 700 pay-per-views or 700,000 pay-per-views for his career. I mean, he was basically doing like a million a year. So he was doing a couple of pay-per-views a year for a while there. But because they fought each other, because of who Floyd was, the biggest threat to Oscar, and, you know, the number one pound-for-pound guy, and everybody thought that Oscar was the biggest threat to Floyd, it made for the biggest pay-per-view of all time. And I think that Haye, even though his numbers aren't as good, he still does very good numbers in Europe. I think combined, they're going to do huge numbers, biggest pay-per-view of all time, you know, any weight class. I think it's very much potential for that because it's such a worldwide international fight. So, yeah, give the man a 50-50 and let's have a fight.
Chris 916, you've been awfully quiet over there, brother. You want to shine on this and throw out your opinion?
I've only been quiet because I don't have too much more to add to the whole situation. I do think that why not give Haye 50-50 aside from – that's just the financial purse. They're both going to make huge money as far as the out-of-the-ring marketing and the television deals they have. The Klitschko brothers both have huge TV deals in Germany, so why not make it 50-50? They're both heavyweight champions. I kind of laughed to myself when you said David Haye's trainer or whoever said he wants to retire by 31, I was thinking, is that going to be like how Oscar De La Hoya is, I'm going to retire by 30, and Bernard Hopkins, I'm going to retire by the age of 40?
Right, exactly.
But, you know, honestly, yeah, I want to see the fight. I think it should be 50-50, and there's no reason why it shouldn't happen at this point. And the only other thought I had during this whole discussion is it's irrelevant, but when you guys were talking about Ruiz earlier, I thought to myself, who would have thought ever when David Tua knocked out John Ruiz in one round that John Ruiz would turn around and have a much better career.
Wow, good point. Good,
I was born.
Well, we were waiting for our next guest, the King David Estrada, who's had a great win over the unbeaten, once one unbeaten, now he's not, Orlando Lora. We're waiting for him to call in. She'll be calling in a few minutes right here. You know, David Chen, the writer for Leaving in the Ring, brother, what are your thoughts about what we're talking about? And, you know, the whole 50-50, Chris, I agree with you. Give him the 50-50, man, because obviously this is a fight that we all want to see. You cannot say David Haye does not have a fan base, because he obviously does. You there, Dave?
Yeah, what's up, man? You want me on the David Haye situation?
David Haye situation, brother.
See, David Haye is funny because he's doing what Floyd was doing when Floyd couldn't pull in the numbers by himself, which is he'll put himself in a position where you want to see somebody who can pull in those numbers fight him and possibly beat him, right? I mean, he can talk his way into this thing as much as he can. I think he's done a really smart thing. He calls the guy out, but then he goes off and does his own thing. So now Vladimir, his patience is running out, and now he's making his own videos, and now it seems like David Haye has all the power in the world, in which, you know, in reality he doesn't, but I think that's what he's doing. You know, he knows he can't pull in the kind of numbers, or at least the ideal numbers he wants to pull in, so he says, you know what, I'm going to latch myself onto the biggest name out there, and I'll make it look like he wants me.
Good point, man. And got to say, you know, got to love YouTube, because what a great way to really push out a heavyweight fight like this and spark a lot of interest. You know, I know a lot of people say that Americans are not interested, you know, or don't know of these two guys. Well, on YouTube, a lot of Americans do traffic through YouTube. They're going to be able to see two of these guys, you know, verbally attack each other. And, you know, fight fans definitely attack each other about who would win the fight if they were able to ever to step in, you know. Really, really quick, man, but before our next guest calls in right now, because I think we still got some time here, our co-host, Gabriel Montoya, wrote a great article about Antonio Margarito and even attended the press conference of his comeback on May 8th. Gabriel definitely got a lot of emails about that there. A lot of people have read your article, and some fight fans are a little confused, and they're saying, not really sure whether Gabriel Montoya is saying that he believes or agrees with Antonio Margarito. Can you have him please clarify this on Leave It in the Ring?
Oof. I've actually been writing my Friday column addressing that. Yeah, man, I actually believe him, strangely enough. There's certain things in the article, and I think, you know, when Max Boxing, we changed servers. I don't know if that makes any sense to anybody that's not internet savvy. And my original story, which was written right after the hearing, which was very, very detailed, actually got lost. We're trying to archive it now so people can go back and kind of use these two pieces to bookend the whole case, because I think I really covered it pretty in depth. But to me, looking at the evidence, I was at the original hearing, and I was at this recent press conference. Let me just quickly sum up how it went down. Nazim Richardson, the trainer from Shane Mosley, came into the dressing room right before their big fight last January. You know, two Januaries back, I guess, January 2009. The right hand of Margarito was already wrapped, and I'm not sure if it was gloved, but it was wrapped. Nazim had problems with that. They began to wrap the second hand, the left hand, and they were arguing over how it was being done. Finally, Richardson said, let me look at the hand wrap pad, which is the knuckle pad. You basically gauze up the hand like you would a normal gym wrap, and then you prepare to put gauze on top of that and then tape it all down. Nazim looked at the knuckle pad. Inside of it, he found a wet piece of gauze. It was about a business card length, kind of a long business card length and width, about that thick, like kind of pressed flat, like it was like ironed and dirty looking, with something that was smeared on it that later turned out to have calcium and sulfur on it. They unwrapped the other hand, and Margarito said, you know, there's nothing wrong with my wraps. Check my other hand. They did. There was something in there. Consequently, they both lost their licenses. Now, the way that it was done, with a big fluffy knuckle pad with an insert hidden inside of it, already pre-wrapped, as Cocatillo said, it was already pre-prepared, is very possible. I'm a person that does get
I'm not understanding wrapped. That. What do they mean by it's already pre-wrapped? It's already prepared.
It's in the gym pad, in the gym bag, right? His story is that somebody else threw the old gym wraps in there, and he grabbed an old knuckle pad and put it on. The knuckle pad is basically a bunch of gauze wrapped up like a pad. You know, you see it all the time on HBO, that big fluffy thing when they're wrapping their hands down.
Absolutely.
That's the knuckle pad. Now,
so
inside of that was where the insert was.
My question is what is it doing in a sparring session?
The thing was that they use it for the heavy bag. That was his story. They use it in the gym to protect the hands, particularly with the heavy bag. They never said, to my recollection, or the tapes that I have, that he used it in sparring. They use it in the gym to protect the hands and against the heavy bag.
I think now, Rashad Holloway would disagree.
He would disagree. I have differing opinions about what went down that day. I do have a witness that was there that day. There was actually an assistant to Mr. Holloway. He disagrees, and even the way the punch landed, he said, was kind of odd. It was like an uppercut, kind of a hooker cut, you know, half hook, half uppercut, and injured his eye. Now, this all came out after, you know, the whole hand wrap thing. Maybe that was one of those things. I don't know. But you also look at Josh Quadi. He fought Antonio Margarito. Guy's got one of the harder heads in the world. And when that fight ended, who looked more beat up, Tony or Quadi? Quadi looked like he always does. And Tony looked pretty damn beat up.
Right,
so,
but Quadi did have hand injury. So.
Yeah, so did Tony. He also had a wrist injury.
Yeah.
A wrist injury and
saying,
an ankle injury.
He didn't come out unscathed, and the way he blocks, you would be led to believe he'd get hit on his hands quite a bit by Margarito.
Well, sure, but I mean, but then, you know, then we get into a gray area of anybody that gets injured, we think the other guy might be cheating.
I think the smoking gun for most people, as far as what leads them to be so suspicious, is the Cotto fight. Looking back on it now, which I think we've all done, we've all gone back and watched that fight. And there's a couple of things that have really stood out to me. You know, the video that I had made today about Jim Lampley's horrible commentary, one of the things that I said is Emmanuel Stewart is usually pretty on point, you know, while the fight's going on, explaining to you things that are happening in the fight. And
right.
If you watch that fight again, you'll hear Emmanuel Stewart kind of making comments about the way Margarito's throwing his punches. He's pushing them. He doesn't really look like he's throwing them with as much authority as you would expect based on the way Cotto's reacting to the punches. And you know, when you look at the aftermath of Cotto's face, you think to yourself, was that something that you could have done without loaded gloves?
Well, I look to the Zab Judah fight with Cotto, where he had a cut all the way through his lower lip because of the mouthpiece that was knocked through by Zab Judah. In the Mosley fight, he had horrendous bleeding about the face, inside the mouth particularly. Then I look at the Pacquiao fight, and people can say, well, that's because Tony beat his ass down, and so that's how he, you know, that's how he is now. But to me, his face looked exactly the same, if not worse, against Manny Pacquiao.
Well, you know, the thing is this, Gabriel, and this is what I'm looking at, okay, is that Sugar Shane Mosley is, you know, they have him record as 5'9". He's not really 5'9". I would say he's breaking 5'8", okay?
Right.
And you look at that, and my thing is, okay, like you said, they're saying it that they found it, and, you know, he got it out of the gym bag, and, you know,
right,
it was put in there by mistake. But this is my whole question here is, if Capetillo was thinking of using these hand wraps on him, okay, because only he knows whether or not that's the truth or not. You know, I'm not
right.
I could say, okay, yeah, maybe I'll give Margarito the benefit of doubt. Maybe he didn't know. But my thing is, why would they all of a sudden use it against a guy from Pomona, California, that's barely breaking 5'8", when they kind of use it against Paul Williams or Curtis Cintrone, who are guys that are obviously a lot bigger? The thing that really raises the question is, if you look back, when he lost to Paul Williams, making his comeback against Golden Johnson, he destroyed that man within two rounds. He looked like he hit even harder than what he did before. That's my big question.
Golden Johnson was not really a welterweight, though. He's a lightweight, right? I mean, he's pretty much a career lightweight, and Golden was nowhere near his prime anymore. You know, it was set in against a guy who's really a gigantic welterweight. You know, I mean, the guy's like close to 40, I believe. Well, actually, no, he's like 38, Golden Johnson. I'm looking at him now.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, I'm starting to get into a gray area because there's a couple things that are periphery that are off the record for me. Things that I found out throughout my investigation into this that I couldn't go on record with, you know, that I really couldn't go public with. To me, hearing about Tony's camp when he had a really bad back, a bulging disc, there's another injury that I swore not to speak of just because it's, you know, it's off the record. That led me to believe that if Capetillo did think about doing this before the fight, which is very possible, I'm not buying his story that he did it by accident. I think he did it on purpose because he felt his fighter needed an edge. But I think just the way the structure of the knuckle pad and the way it was done, to me, it's very possible that Tony did not. His story has remained consistent from the hearing till now, till, you know, when we interrogated him, basically. All the reporters descended on him at this last press conference. His story has remained exactly the same. And people can say that he was coached, but it's been the same to me, you know, from the first interviews he's done till now. And, you know, one of his handlers, his manager, Sergio Diaz, I had a long interview with him. And he said, you know, Tony's the kind of guy, I prepare his water. And he trusts me that I'm not going to put something in his water. He doesn't ask me what I do with the water. He doesn't, you know, say, what kind of water are you buying? He just says, oh, you're getting the water? Cool. And it's done. That's it. You know, Tony's a real simple guy. He's a fighter. And he trusts the people around him. And in a sense, I mean, he tends to believe Capetillo's story that it was a mistake. I think that's just personal bias, you know. He loves the guy like a father. But to me, just seeing the structure, knowing what I know about his camp, I just think they were trying to protect their guy. And, you know, I've also heard intimations, you know, you're looking at Sugar Shane Mosley, who today, speaking of YouTube, the grand jury testimony video is leaked of him admitting to using EPO, which is something we all knew with his grand jury testimony. Now, you're going in California, one of the shittier commissions in the world, against a guy who's a known performance-enhancing drug user who's still performing at a high level, well into his 30s, almost into his 40s. Maybe they felt they needed an edge there too. I don't know. That's just me speculating. Mm-hmm. But to me, it's just going with my gut. Sometimes you got to just kind of – you spend a year thinking about it, investigating it, and you go, you know what? I got to make a decision, and that's part of mine.
Let me ask you this then, Gabriel. How damaging was that press conference for Antonio Margarito? And when being asked, I mean, it's on YouTube. Fight fans, if you haven't had a chance to go check it out, Uppercut Magazine posted on there, David Avila, good friend of Leaving the Ring. And during the conference, it didn't really seem like he was very sincere about his apology. It was more like, I'm irritated. Stop asking me the same question. His camp, obviously, were getting very, very upset. How do fight fans get past something that really, honestly, he rather just tuck away and hope just to kind of just disappear?
Well, here's what they're doing. His lawyer, Daniel Petrocelli, they're going to, I believe, do an appeal with the Court of Appeals about the California State Athletic Commission ruling. So they're going to attack it on that front because they basically revoked his license because he's the captain of the ship. They revoked Capetillo and his license basically because they hadn't even tested what the substance was at the time because it was a wet foreign substance, which is basically enough for all of us to agree, yeah, give the guy's license away. But they mainly with Tony was because he was the captain of the ship and he, you know, that was his trainer. So, you know, he's got to accept responsibility. Tony's position is that I don't need to accept responsibility because I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't know what was going on. I don't know how much it hurt him, you know. To me, the whole translator thing, the translator really didn't do a very good job, Ricardo Jimenez, who generally does. And this one, he became very combative. At one point, I was arguing with him, and I kind of had to say, like, why am I arguing with you? You're the translator, you know. Ask him my question. There was another reporter there that was yelling at us, telling us to quit asking these questions. I had one fighter, Brandon Rios, kind of yelling to the reporter, leaving alone about the hand wraps. It was kind of mayhem. But I think the whole thing that they're doing is basically they're not coming to California until they do the appeals case to try to get their license. The goal with them is actually a Manny Pacquiao fight is what it seems like, in which case they won't ever go back to California to get that license because Manny will only fight in three states, Florida, Texas, or Nevada. So that's kind of their plan. Does it look shady? It doesn't look good, that's for sure.
No, but it doesn't look good at all.
No, it doesn't look good at all. But at the same time, this is a fighter, you know, who doesn't even worry about his water. Why is he going to be, you know, worrying about his legal case? He's going to let all the smarter people do the job. He's going to fight where they tell him to fight, make some money, and come back. It's going to be up to boxing fans to make their own. That was kind of the whole point of my article.
I understand that. I understand that. You know, a guy that doesn't worry about what's put in his water is not going to worry about his case. Let the smarter people. But Antonio Margarito, it's the smarter people that got you in this situation. So it's about time you start looking into the water, looking into the hand wraps, and start looking into your legal case. Right?
Yeah. Maybe it is a time for him to take some control, you know, of people around him. But he's also gotten rid of Apatio. They fired him back in December. He's now with, you know, Robert Garcia out at Oxnard. So he's kind of taken some measure of control. I think he'll be paying attention from now on what goes on in his raps, you know. I don't know if his reputation will ever be the same. I mean, how could it ever be?
Yeah,
because we'll never know. It's one of those things. Like I said, I after a year plus, I finally just said, I've got to kind of stand on one side of the fence or the other. I've looked at all the evidence. It's about as good as it's going to get, barring some sort of, you know, confession from Tony or some dude that there was something that had to come forward. And to me, my gut says, I believe the guy. He looked me in the eyes and he's, you know, looked all of us in the eyes and said, I didn't know what happened. Right? Which,
but
you guys,
Gable, I got to go back again. I got to play devil advocate here, because how many of us as men have looked into the eyes of a woman and say, I love you, just to get you in bed?
Yeah, but that's a woman. That's a whole different thing.
You know, when you're in trouble, when I remember me, but really honestly, getting in trouble by the parents, and I say, "No, I didn't do it, just to get out of it." You know, I mean, you got to admit, Antonio Margarito at this moment is in a very, very hot seat. If you guys want to call in, 347-215-7598. I know we got a fight fan on the line right now that wants to chime in and talking a little bit about what we're talking about. I'll give you a few minutes, brother, to say what you want to say, get it off your chest, and we definitely got to. Hopefully our guest has not called in, because if he does, I got to cut you off and get the king, David Estrada. Go ahead, brother, from 203, Boxing Fan 4.
Yeah, I wonder what you guys think about the whole Sugar Shane Mosley Floyd Mayweather fight.
Do you honestly
think that Sugar Shane Mosley, the last time I checked, he was 75 years old. he's going to have a chance to beat Floyd Mayweather Jr.?
You know, Boxing Fan 4, I want to answer that question, but unfortunately, brother, I'm going to hold off. The reason why, I think my co-host is too shit, hold off, because we do have a roundtable on April 18th, which is this Sunday. We're going to have a lot of people from Alan Bernstein.
Please call back in.
Yeah, and you can definitely call in on the roundtable, and you can hear our prediction and our breakdown, and we'll give you all the info we want to talk about the 75-year-old Sugar Shane Mosley, brother.
Yeah, he's got to get rid of that Jerry Curl. Jerry Curl's got to go. He's got to go, bro.
Just keep it real, real 1980s, you know.
I know, man. I mean, you got to remember, the guy is 75 years old, so he's gonna bring to the table the style that he grew up on. You know what I mean? I mean, I know guys that are 75 years old and they still wear the pachuco suits. You know what I'm saying?
I had a friend of mine from Brooklyn. This guy, David Lee, he's an actor, and he was staying with me. We were talking about movies, and he said, you know how I could tell Samuel L. Jackson was a badass in Pulp Fiction? He's like, it was the hair. It was the Jerry Curl. Like, the guy with the Jerry Curl in modern times that's rocking that absolutely does not give a fuck. So maybe something to be said about a man that's rocking a Jerry Curl going into a fight with Floyd. Maybe,
hey, but you know what?
He doesn't care anymore.
I heard, though, the guy with the Jerry Curl, though, is the guy that always gets popped by the cops, because all you got to do is follow the drip.
Oh!
We're supposed to call David Estrada. We've got his number. We're supposed to call into him, and then he'll.
Yeah, definitely. We have our PR Alex calling them right now. We'll be getting them on, and all. We're just waiting for Alex to patch him in for us, and then we'll do our interview. But let me see who else. Let's see what other fight fan is out there that wants to talk to us on Leaving the Ring. Area code 865, brother. You're on live with us on Leaving the Ring. Go ahead and tell us your thoughts about what we were talking about a little earlier about Antonio Margarito.
Well, I'm Eduardo from Tennessee, and I'm calling because I am pissed off. He ruined Miguel Cotto, that cheating bastard. I am so mad. You have no idea, man. I hope he never fights again, man. I don't know why people are letting Bob Arum with this circus show freaking letting a cheater. He could have killed Miguel Cotto. Anybody remember Louis Resto? I mean, come on now.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously,
well,
man.
It's interesting, too, is that Bob was – he represented Billy Collins, and he also represented Miguel Cotto, and yet he's kind of stood by him this whole time. I found that very interesting. I mean, Bob seems to think that there's no evidence that suggests that Margarito knew, you know, and there really isn't, I mean, other than him getting his hand wraps. But
well, I mean,
could it
be, though, Gabriel, I mean, with Billy Collins being I believe was an Irish-American, if I'm correct, right?
From Nashville, Tennessee.
Absolutely, and Antonio Margarito being, you know, Mexican, and he even told you to your face, and you responded back to him. He said, "Well, in Mexico, it's a bigger sport here than the United States." So, and when he told that, when I heard him say that, that only told me, "Well, I'm following the money." You know, I don't care if he's innocent or not.
Yeah.
I'm following the money.
I think there was a line that I left out of the thing because I wanted to keep it neutral, but he said, "Where else can we go? Where else, you know, can we go and take Margarito to make 20,000 people come and see the fight?" And I'm thinking,
like,
well,
impersonation.
When you fought Shane Mosley, there was 20,000 people at the Staples Center. So,
right,
you kind of are avoiding California, you know. But you know, that's, Bob's a Harvard-educated lawyer. He's not going to give you a straight answer. You know, I tried my best. I totally understand where the caller's coming from, though. You know.
Well, and I gotta say, you know, the caller here, Orlando, right, brother? Is that your name?
Eduardo.
Eduardo, you know, you said, how are we letting this guy fight on May 8th, the circus? Well, it goes back into saying again, you know, what we have been talking about is, as fight fans, we have now have settled of allowing people to say that boxing is a business. It's a business, yeah, but it's a sport. We should be, we're the ones that have the power to dictate what's going to be happening next for each fighter. That's what boxing is supposed to be all about. You know, it's very difficult to stop somebody from fighting when you don't have everybody round up and have a rally saying no.
But that's kind of hard to do. That's like trying to control the government. The government's doing pretty much whatever they want to do right now. How are we supposed to
control
them? Well,
that's because
the
government has been able to break the will of
taxes.
You know,
everybody stopped paying their taxes, we would take away their funding, and they wouldn't be able to fund these ridiculous wars that they're putting us through.
And you know what?
Apparently they can, though, because they'll just print more money, and then that never seems to be a problem.
Well,
there's
an argument there, but the same token, don't buy the pay-per-view. Steal it. And make sure all your friends do, too. Send them the link, and make sure you steal it online. That's, to me, the only way I know that can really hit these guys where it hurts, when you don't agree with what they're doing. You know,
I doubt Margarito is going to be selling lots of pay-per-views anytime soon. And as far as what he could do to repair his reputation over the long term, there's really only one way I could see that happening. He's going to be under the microscope, especially if he fights in California or anywhere in the U.S. for that matter.
Sure.
And if he was to get fights with top-name guys, which I'm not sure that anybody's really going to want to go down that road with him, but if he can secure a fight with an elite guy, knowing that he's going to be under that microscope, and he looks the way he did, you know, against Kermit Cintron and Miguel Cotto and on, if he looks that good, then maybe his reputation does get repaired a little bit. If he doesn't, then I think the verdict will be in, you know.
Absolutely, you know, and then we gotta let in our next guest, brother. Thank you for calling in on Leaving the Ring, I gotta kind of agree with you on some of the things that you said. I think, just like a fight fan, I feel the exact same way. Is, you know, it's gonna be very hard to repair, and why allow him back in a year? Not enough. So let me go ahead and patch in a guy that had a contender that had a great outing Saturday night. The King, David Estrada, brother, are you on the line with us?
Yeah, I'm on the line, man. What's up?
What's up, brother? How's everything going? I mean, has the party stopped yet?
Man, you know what? It hasn't stopped yet, but it's going to stop pretty soon, man.
Let me ask you this. You know, you get the sensational win. A win, obviously, a lot of people were counting you out, which I thought was kind of weird, because you're a very valid contender. You've been there with some very tough guys, you know, who you were pretty much in the same run of a Luis Collazo, where you're very close in doing some great things, but this fell short. Now you get this great win. Where does it put you in your career at this moment now?
Well, I mean, I thought it was very important for me to win this fight. You know, I was thinking after winning this fight, I would be placed somewhere in the top 10. And, you know, that's basically the beginning to my rise back to the top. So, it was an important fight. I did what I had to do. Now I'm just waiting to see where they put me and waiting to see what's next, you know?
David, let me ask you this, okay? Going into this fight, you know, I wasn't able to watch the whole thing. I watched the highlights of it mostly. I know my co-host Gabriel Montoya was there. He was able to watch it live, and I'm pretty sure the rest of my co-hosts were able to see it live on ESPN2. What I saw, though, was a very, very fast, a great-timed right-hand land, time and time and over and over again, okay? And also what I saw was a guy that let it all loose. At what turning point did you decide, I'm going to fight you? I'm going to go out there and do what I need to do.
Before the fight even started, being that he was a Gary Shaw fighter, and we all know what happened last time I fought a Gary Shaw fighter, Abregu. You know, I won the fight and I got robbed. So I said, okay, you know what? I'm going to go out there and I'm just going to war from the first round, and that's it. That's the way it's going to be. And, you know, everything turned out how it was supposed to.
After that fight, you know, everything is, you know, it's obviously said the party has not, it hasn't stopped, you know. You go back home. Now you get to sit back and kind of sit back and look at what you done in that fight with Lara. Has there been any talk of when you're going to get back into the ring? And if there is, what is the next name that you would like to take up on, or the name they want to give you?
Well, my promoter's been receiving a couple calls, and he basically, you know, just said, you know, that's not the fight we want, you know, because we want my whole team feels like by me beating a guy 26-0 that I was supposed to lose to, I deserve a money fight. You know, I don't need anything under $100,000. I deserve to make that type of money. I've fought all the best guys in the division, and I've never ducked anybody, and it's time for me to get paid and have something to show for. That's the way my whole team feels. So basically, that's where we're standing, you know?
Now, Dave, do you think it's going to be easier, though, for guys that, you know, the big money fights to want to take you on off of such a good performance? Or are you hoping some guy's going to think, you know what, I'll fight him, I'll take him on, you know, because I think that was a one-time deal for him?
Yeah, you know what, that's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping for somebody, you know, I wish there was more fighters like Mosley. You know, Mosley, he fought two guys back-to-back that nobody else would give a chance. He fought Vernon Forrest, and he fought Winky Wright. Everybody was scared to fight these guys, and what did Mosley do? Him being the champion that he is, he fought these guys and gave them a chance, and they became great fighters because they were able to win the fight against Mosley. But at the same time, that made Mosley an even greater champ for giving a fighter a chance. Not one of these fighters that's, you know, all their opponents are hand-picked, and if they do beat them because it's their promoter, they still get the win, because that's bullshit, you know? There's fighters out there that are champs right now that have lost fights, and just because they're the favorite and their promoter was promoting, they get the win, and I don't think that's right.
I want to go back real quick because I got to tell you, there's a fight that you did. You didn't win the fight, but you won me over as a fan. And that's when you fought Jesus Soto Corrales. That was a great fight,
right,
in my opinion. You guys were going back and forth, back and forth. Jesus Corrales, he got in with Alfonso Gomez. Is that a guy you would want to get in with to get a title shot, Alfonso Gomez? And if you do you think that would be leverage in maybe trying to get a big name to mix it up with you?
Definitely. I think that will be a great fight between me and Alfonso Gomez. And going back to the Carras name, you know, I felt I was robbed in that fight too because, I mean, I got dropped and I got up by the count of three and I was clear-minded. I wasn't hurt. You know, I mean, shit happens. You might be off balance and get caught with a shot. Or maybe you just get caught by surprise. You go down, you get up, you're not hurt. They're supposed to let you, you know, continue to fight. I go down, I get up by the count of three. Ref asks me, you okay? I say, yes. He says, walk to me. I walk straight to him, look at him in his eyes, and then he stops the fight. I thought that was bullshit. Because I felt like, you know what, I'm going to knock this dude out right now. He wants to. I go down, I come up, and I'll knock the guy out. You know what? It's not a big deal. You know, they didn't give me the respect of letting me continue in that fight. And I wouldn't mind having a rematch with him just to prove a point.
Well, that's a follow-up question that I had there. You know, saying that that was bullshit, that they stopped it, and you felt that you could have knocked them out. Looking back at that fight and seeing what you did this past Saturday, that seems to me would have been the right game plan to fight Karras, right?
Right.
Sticking in the outside.
I think that would be the perfect next fight. Either him or Abregu, just to prove a point and show people that, hey, you know what? Estrada's in this to win this, and he's a problem. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely, brother. You know, real quick, because, you know, Alfonso Gomez is a fan of the radio show. If, you know, and I'm pretty sure it's going to, you know, get back to him, you know, after this interview. Got anything to say to him, maybe of trying to entice him of wanting to get into the ring with you?
Yeah, you know, I've seen him fight on the Contender and all that. He's a good fighter. He had a couple good wins against some big names. And, you know, he got a lot of heart. I got a lot of heart. I think it'll be a fan favorite. The fans know that, you know, he comes to fight and I come to fight. Let's stop matching up these fights where one guy's running and the other guy's trying to fight. Let's start matching up some fights where you got two guys in there that are going to go toe-to-toe and give the fans what they want to see. And may the best man win. I'm tired of all this other stuff where, you know, these people, they want to get in there and win the fight by running and throwing a jab. This is not the amateurs. This is professional boxing. It's warrior status. You know, it's different. I'm not a boxer. I'm a warrior. I'm a fighter. I don't consider myself a boxer. I'm a fighter. There's a difference.
Man, I got to say, brother, I just love what you had to say right there. I'm going to pass it on to my co-host, Gabriel. He got me all pumped up, Gabriel. I'm ready to go outside and punch somebody in the face right now, man, and say, hey, it's warrior status, Michael. It's warrior status. Go ahead, Gabriel.
Yeah, how you doing, David? Nice to talk to you again, man. Can you talk a little bit about what precipitated this whole change in you, the people that are behind you, the promotional company and your new trainer, how that all came together for you to culminate in this big, great victory for you?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm from Chicago, and before I was living in Miami for 6 years, last time I lived in Miami, and, you know, things weren't going good, and I felt that, you know, I started boxing in Chicago. So I just felt, man, you know what? This shit ain't working out. I got to go back to where it all started and see what I can make happen. You know, so I basically had a limited amount of money, and I just said, you know what? I'm going to take my chance. I'm going back home with this certain amount of money, and I'm going to make it happen. Well, a friend of mine, which is my trainer now, which is Fearless Fernando Hernandez, I've known him since the Nationals when I was 18 years old. I wasn't even living in Chicago at the time. I was living in Texas. I was in the Nationals. I was on the Texas team. He was on the Chicago team. He was the captain of the Chicago team. So out of curiosity, I go to the Chicago tent to see who's in there, if I could recognize anybody. I didn't recognize nobody. He was the oldest guy on the team. He saw me, and he started, you know, he was cool with me. He shook up with me, and he said, hey, what's up? And I was like, man, I'm from Chicago. I'm just here, you know, seeing if I recognize anybody. Make a long story short, we exchanged numbers. He told me, hey, you know what? If you ever come back to Chicago, hit me up. You know, I'll set you up with a gym and everything. He was real cool. So I ended up moving back to Chicago a year later. I called him. We connected. I started training at Windy City. Me and him became the best of friends. So we stayed the best of friends throughout all these years. I ended up moving back to Miami. like I said, things weren't working out. 6 years later, moved back to Chicago, limited amount of money. Money started running out. He's my friend. I'm talking to him. He sees my frustration. He knows a lot of people, you know, in all type of industries. So, you know, he seen my frustration. He says, you know, he's a lot older than me. He says, Mijo, you know what? I could help you. He said, I could help you in more ways than one. He said, first of all, I could train you. He said, second of all, I could find you a manager to fund you. He said, I could take care of everything, right? So he said, but you got to trust me and you got to listen to me and do what exactly what I tell you. He said, this is some serious business. You only got one more chance. He said, we can't fuck around. So then, you know, I looked at him and I said, you know what? All right, I'm gonna do this. We shook on it, and that ever since then, first thing we started training, the weight started coming off, because as everybody knows, I used to have a bad habit of, you know, blowing up to like 195 and then dropping 50 pounds in 2 months to fight, as I did with Berto, Kermit, Cintron, and so forth. So the weight started coming off. Then he introduced me to my manager, which alleviated the money situation. And then through my manager and my trainer, I ended up getting with my promoter. So now I have a full team, which is what every fighter needs to become a champ. So now here I am. You know, I have everything I need. I have no excuses. I do what my trainer tells me to do, and I win the fights. And it's as simple as that.
That's awesome, man. That sounds like you just had a hell of a turnaround, you know. Just a man just made a decision and said, you know, this is it, do or die, you know, and live or don't. I applaud you for it, man. Can you talk a little bit about some of the opponents? You talked about Alfonso Gomez. You think, you know, you want, like, a big fight, but, you know, a lot of those guys, like Berto, you've already fought him. He may think, you know, I want to take the win, and especially since you're looking better now than when you guys fought. Do you think ESPN level at this point, or you want HBO only, or just basically the best fight that can put you in a better position, kind of more another stepping stone for you? Would that satisfy
you? To tell you the truth, I want HBO and pay-per-view again. You know what I mean? I mean, I know I already fought on ESPN plenty of times. I fought on all the Spanish channels. I fought on Showbox a few times. It's time to get back to HBO and pay-per-view. I have one HBO fight and one pay-per-view fight. I don't belong fighting on the rest of the channels. I belong fighting on the elite level. So that's where I want to be.
Chris, Antonio Margarito, would you get in with him?
I'll fight him too. I fight. Man, you know what? Like I said, I don't duck anybody. Anybody they offer me that's going to pay me good or give me an opportunity to take somebody's belt, I think that's the perfect fight for me. I'll fight Pacquiao, Mayweather, or anybody with a belt or anybody else that is going to be a good money fight.
Well,
and you won't hear no complaining from me about I want this dude to do this blood work for steroids and all that. Hey, you know what? Vargas was on steroids when De La Hoya fought him, and that didn't help him. So what's everybody else crying about?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, you know, the reason why I mentioned Antonio Margarito, David, is because, you know, I think everybody, all the other guys that you mentioned, like Pacquiao and even Mosey Mayweather, I think they have some other stuff on their agenda coming up,
next year.
Where Antonio Margarito, in my opinion, would probably be the only man available and the only man that could get you on a pay-per-view card or an HBO card, right?
There's one more name. There's Cotto. Don't forget about him.
Oh, yeah, you're right. There's Cotto. That's if he's successful, though, over Yuri Foreman, though, right?
Right. Like I said, you know what? I mean, you know, I used to like to watch Margarito fight. You know, I'm Mexican descent. He's Mexican from Mexico. I used to be, you know, proud to watch him fight. after I found out what was going on with his hand wraps, I said, you know what? Who am I to say that his whole career wasn't based on this shit? You know, and then his trainer was Caraz's trainer. And how do I know that Caraz didn't have the same bullshit raps on when I fought him? Because if you do your research, he never got a TKO after Margarito got caught with them raps, and he's fought like 3 or 4 times since. So what does that tell you?
That's very true.
Yep, I was going to say, man, I'm going to pass it really quick to my co-host, Justin Strikehart. Justin, you have any questions for King David Estrada?
Yeah, I got a couple questions for you, David. Let's go back a little bit. Andre Berto, you fought him, as mentioned, a few times just now. You fought him a couple years ago, and he used you as a stepping stone. First, I want to know, you know, what is it that you feel like has made you into that guy that's been used as a stepping stone more than once? And why is it that these decisions go against you, or in some cases fights get stopped? And I know you feel like they shouldn't be stopped when they are.
Okay, it all started by me never having a promoter or a manager throughout, I believe, 15 fights in my career. When I fought Ishe Smith, which was my first loss, which I admit, I know I lost that fight. You know what I mean? But that's where it started, you know, by just not being connected, not having a team. And that's number one. Number two, I wasn't in the Olympics. I'm not going to be protected like the rest of these guys. When they lose a fight or it's a close fight, they're automatically going to get a decision because all these people with money backing them. You know, I never had them luxuries. So I had to do it the rough way. My record is a real record. Like, if you look at my record, I only have 4 fights on my record where I had fighters that had more losses than wins. If you look at these champions, a lot of them have, like, 10 or 15 guys with more losses than wins on their record. And I don't think that they should be respected for that. You know what I'm saying?
I absolutely know what you're saying.
Days, if this was the old days, I say 85% of these champions wouldn't be champs. If we still had 15-round fights and the best fought the best, they wouldn't even be probably in the top 10.
Yeah,
you know?
15-round fights especially would ruin a lot of guys' game plan.
Yep, definitely.
Getting a little bit more into the Andre Berto fight, though, I remember watching it, and I remember when that fight got stopped, you were very emphatic against the fact that it had just been stopped. Would you be interested in fighting Andre Berto again, and what are your feelings on him? Do you really think that he's as good as what HBO makes him out to be?
I would love to fight Andre Berto again because it would be a whole different story. It would be a whole different story. You know what? I can't take nothing away from the man. He's the champ for a reason. Okay? Personally, he lost the fight to Collazo. Collazo beat him, and they gave it to him. You know what I'm saying? That's my opinion. I could be wrong, but that's just my opinion. But getting back to it, that is like number one on my list. And like I said, if this was like back in the days, they would have never stopped that fight. I would have ended the fight on, you know, I did end that fight on my feet. I ain't never been knocked out. The only person I've been knocked out by is the ref every single time.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I remember
and I think
you
being that. That's bullshit. That's bullshit. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I'm going to get knocked out, like, they gave Gotti, rest in peace, the respect. It, because they knew he was a warrior. You know what I'm saying? Like, if he goes down, he's going to get up. How about how many times did Trinidad get dropped and he came back and knocked the guy out when they thought, that's it, the fight's over? You know, give me the same respect if I go down. Give me the same respect because I'm not a boxer. I'm a fighter. I'll dig down deep and I'll find something to come back with. But you got to give me that chance if I do go down. And they didn't give me that respect. Or maybe it wasn't that they weren't giving me the respect. Maybe it was just the fact that the promoter pays everybody and I was fighting the promoter's fighter. I don't know.
Right. I mean, I don't think anybody would argue that Andre Berto seems to be very protected at the moment. So what would make that fight different for you the second time around? What would make it so you could take the win?
There's one main factor. I'm not going to lose 50 pounds in 2 months to fight him. That's it. It's as simple as that. Okay, you seen what happened in my last fight? That's what happens when I don't have to lose all that weight for a fight.
Well, yeah, I mean, just like Dave said a while back, you got me pretty excited to see you get back in the ring with an elite guy. So with that said, good luck. I'm going to pass it on back to Dave. So I'll talk to you next time.
You know, man.
Thanks a lot, man.
Hey, Dave, I got to say this. We were talking about the boxing politics and how we need how the boxing needs to be governed. And if that happened, bro, I think you got to be mayor of the government of boxing right now, man. Because everything you say is all truth. You know what I'm saying? And I like to hear a fighter come out and not only show what he can do in the ring, but show what he can do by voice and his opinion and not holding back and sugarcoating anything at all.
Right. I've always been the type of person that if I believe in something and I'm in a room full of 100 people and everybody's saying yes and I believe it's no, I don't care what everybody else says. I'm going to say what I feel, and that's the way it's going to stay. You know, I don't let nobody influence the way that I feel or think. I tell it like it is. That's the way I'm always going to be. You know, I'm a real person. I'm not. I don't just go on what everybody else is going on.
You know, Bull Warrior status. David Estrada. We got David Estrada on leading the ring, breaking it down and telling it how it is. Chris 916 out of Sacramento, brother. You have any questions for the king?
Yeah, I just have a couple of real quick questions. First off, man, great performance the other night. For lack of a better term, you really kicked that kid's ass. I'm curious, though, man, before the fight, I don't know if you've watched it since then, but Teddy Atlas in his pre-fight breakdown, he was talking about you hitting him with that overhand right, and the way the fight played out, you just did exactly that. Did you and your trainer see something in Laura that saw he was open for that?
Well, you know, we had a DVD on a few of his fights, but we really couldn't see too much from that because, it was, I would say, about 4 fights on the DVD, and, like, 3 of them were, like, real quick knockouts. And then the other one was against a dude that he was supposed to beat, and he ended up going, like, 6 or 8 rounds. And I saw I just felt like his jab could be countered, you know, like I could slip his jab to the outside and come over with the right hand. And I wasn't even necessarily thinking on the overhand right. I was thinking more the straight right. As the fight went on, I said, you know, I could hit this dude with overhand rights too. And so I started letting those go, and that's how that played out.
Right. Now, one thing about your career, I mean, I've been watching you fight for at least since the Chris Smith fight. Win or lose, you never quit. You never quit trying in there. Was there any time in this fight where you felt like you mentally broke this kid?
Man, I felt like that. I think by the 3rd round, I knew I had him. You know, I knew I had him because I just kept putting the pressure on him, and he would try to come hard, and I would just keep on putting more pressure on him.
All right, my last question before I turn it back to Dave is, you talked about the Abrego loss, you talked about the Soto Carras loss. If you could get a rematch between either of those two guys, which one would you want more?
I would want Abrego because he's ranked higher than Carras.
All right.
You know, not only do I want to prove a point, but I also want to move ahead in the game. So sometimes you got to make the right decision too, you know?
Yeah, actually, you know what? One more quick question, man, because you've been in the ring with Shane Mosley. Do you think Shane Mosley could beat Floyd Mayweather?
You know what? Everybody asks me that, and I say yes. The reason is, Shane Mosley's a bigger man. He's stronger. He can pretty much match Mayweather's hand speed, but he has a lot more experience than him. And he's fast enough and enough of a warrior to be able to cut him off and make him fight. I don't think Mayweather's going to be able to run and win the fight on a jab or a 1-2 with Mosley. He's going to have to fight. And when he stops to fight, that's when Mosley's going to do his thing.
Yeah, sounds good, man. Looking forward to seeing your next fight. Go ahead, Ruff.
Well, there you go. We have the King, David Estrada, on Leave It in the Ring, and he's telling it how it is, man. Warrior status. Hey, David, thank you very much, brother, for coming through on Leaving the Ring, bro. It was a pleasure speaking to you. Can't wait to have you on once again on your next fight or before your upcoming next fight.
Thanks a lot for having me, man. It was fun.
Hold on,
brother.
It's
always a pleasure, David. Thank you, man.
All right, man. Later.
Later.
Well, there you go, David Estrada, man. I got to say, love the guy's personality as much as I like his boxing style, Gabriel. Didn't hold back and pretty much just said what exactly was on his mind. I like the fact that he called out a couple fighters that he wants to step into the ring. And how could you not want to see him get the fights that he's asking for?
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, I've had a few people kind of go, why did you write a back-end piece on David? You know, I wrote a piece after his fight. Didn't really write one going in. And it's because I didn't think he was going to win the fight. You know, I had talked with his promoter, and they were all very convinced, and I wasn't that convinced. And then I literally, from that first punch when he comes out and just throws that straight right and lands flush, which was right in front of me at ringside, you know, Laura had his back to me. I was like, damn, you know, this is a totally different dude. His quickness, his reflexes, he was like low to the ground, just a different guy. I mean, you know, still kind of the same style, but it was like tightened up, you know, it was like he took his car to the shop, you know.
Right.
And I was inspired. I hung out with him for a few hours afterwards. We rewatched the fight on ESPN. I got to see him sipping champagne and watching himself. And it was just it's kind of the first time I've ever been to a victory party, basically. It was inspiring. So, you know, that's what I'm going to do my best work when I'm writing, is when I'm inspired. And I want to see him again. You know, let's see him against Berto again. Why the hell not, you know?
Why not?
Let
exactly.
Guy get his redemption or whatever, you know?
Exactly.
Absolutely.
You know, and got to say real quick, who's sponsoring this show is King of the West presents Rage Against the Ropes, powered by Pit Bull, May 6th card. It involves boxing and MMA at the Circus Disco, 6655 Santa Monica Boulevard, Hollywood, California. You get your tickets at kingofthewest.com, or you can call 818-314-9705 for your ticket info. A good friend of ours, Donnell Livingston, is going to be doing his pro boxing debut. Also is going to be Joseph Judah. Then Hike, an MMA fighter, is going to be calling in about 7 o'clock between 7:30 at 7:30 to talk about that fight he's billed on the undercard. So it should be a great night of boxing, May 6th. Go be sure to go support our man, Donnell Livingston, who is making his pro debut. We still got a lot of stuff to cover. We're not going to be taking a break because we have so many things to cover and talk about. We still got to throw up the conference call between Krista Neimer or Yella with, I wouldn't even have to say Adam, I said versus Kathy Duva on that. And then we got to go roll into the Stand and Fight rundown news. So I think what I'm going to do first is go into Krista Neimer Oriella and get some of the guys' thoughts about this, because this fight has just got me pumped up. So here we go.
This is an exclusive from Leading the Ring.
And a question for Chris: do you consider Tomas to be a full-blown heavyweight or just a cruiserweight who doesn't have to cut down, and how is that going to affect your strategy in this fight?
You know, I consider him a cruiserweight that doesn't have to cut down. You know, to me, he's a medicated heavyweight. You know, I don't do I respect him as a man? Yeah, I respect him as a fighter, and I respect him as that function. You know, you always have to go in the ring respecting your fellow opponent. You know, but as far as him being a full-blown heavyweight, I don't believe he is. And after this, you're going to have to go back to cruiserweight and get his titles back. Because, honestly, my job in this fight is to show him that he doesn't belong in that division.
I'm
going
to try for a different okay, because it's interesting. By the way, what do you mean by, because I know Adam will ask about it, what do you mean by dedicated heavyweight?
We all want to know that, yeah.
Well, it's just plain and simple. Just like saying he takes whatever you have to take to make heavyweight. You know, everybody knows how I became a heavyweight. Everybody knows that I'm a fat fucking heavyweight. Everybody knows that. Who cares? Everybody knows that. There's no denying that. You know, and I believe he's a blown up cruiserweight. That's just what it is. You can take it however you want to take it, and that's what it is. I think he's just a big cruiserweight.
And honestly, you're making a very unsubstantiated accusation there.
You can call it whatever you want to call it. I don't care what you think. You know, I'm just saying what I'm saying. You know, that's what I love about this country. I got the freedom of speech, and I can say whatever I want to say. You know. But as far as this fight's concerned, I don't believe he's going to fight me the way he fights you for most fighters. I believe he's going to come, he's going to run, and he's not going to give what everybody expects that this fight's going
to
be.
Well, know that you don't actually have the right to say anything you want to say. You might want to discuss that with your attorney. So you start if
you're
przynoszą coś nowego na przyszłość, także jestem gotowy na ciężką walkę.
This is additional motivation the cruiserweight needs to put me down and send me back to the cruiserweight. Good, I don't care. Let's see what will happen on 24.
How you doing, guys? I just got a few questions for both camps here. First question goes for Chris. Chris, it sounds to me that you're a little upset about getting Thomas Adamek as a challenge. Is it? Do you feel that you've been disrespected since your last outing? Do you think that some fans and some people are doubting what your capabilities are?
Oh, no, I'm not upset by getting him as a challenge. You know what? I take nothing away from him as a fighter, man. He's a great fighter. He won championships at two different divisions, man. You know, how many people can say that? Not many people can say that. You know, am I disrespected by that at all? No. Am I motivated? I'm very motivated. And, no. Trust me, I do not get no disrespect by that, man. You know, I honestly, I have respect for him because I do believe he's a great champion in his weight division. You know, there's no disrespect there. You know, No, I think that
is
an honor, you know. It is an honor to me.
And all Chris was saying is that he just thinks he's a real heavyweight, and this man's coming up from light heavyweight and cruiserweight, and it's going to be a difference.
That was
the only point he was making. He was going to send him back to the cruiserweight division because he doesn't think he belongs with the real heavyweight.
Absolutely.
Because he thinks he's taking drugs.
No. You know what? You need to understand this, okay? I didn't mean he was taking steroids or anything like that, so get that out of your mind. There's different kinds of stuff. You can take protein, there's a lot of glutamine and stuff like that. Everything is over the counter. Just because I said drugs doesn't mean I said steroids. Not
there's a big difference there, Chris.
Like I said, it got a little heated in there when they started talking about, this. I mean, I don't know. Gabriel, to me, it sounded to me he seemed a little, I guess, I would have to say, disrespected because he has to fight that cruiserweight. You know what I mean? Where that just came out of left field, him saying, a medicated, blown-up heavyweight.
Well, I mean, I can see where Chris is coming from. I mean, he's proved himself less as a heavyweight than David Haye has, you know? I didn't really get that he was saying he's on steroids.
I didn't get that. I don't think he said that either at all, you know?
I thought Kathy got a little emotional, you know, which is, you got to really steel yourself if you're going to be the opponent of Chris Arreola, of the promoter or the fighter, because the man talks shit. That's what he does, you know? And it's more like from the hip. It's not like David Haye. Chris means everything he says for the most part. And you know, he's just going to call it how he sees it. And he's basically saying, I want to knock you back to cruiserweight because you really don't belong up here. And I don't really see how, you know, we'll see, I guess, in the fight, which I can't wait to go to. But I don't really think of Adamek as really a heavyweight. I mean, I think he's kind of a smarter, you know, craftier cruiserweight type guy, but I'm really curious to see how he's going to take Areola's punch.
Well, I tell you what, there's about 10 minutes of audio of this. We'll be putting it on Leaving the Ring today so you can hear the complete, because I did have some more questions for Chris the Nightmare. And, You know, Gabriel, I'm really pumped up about this fight, just like you right now. I can't wait to see this fight. But I got to say, I'm giving Adamick a chance here. I think there is a possibility he can pull it off. I see something there that, you know, Chris could be, like I said, in his voice, in his tone, it seems to me he is motivated. But it could be also, could it be he's overlooking this guy because this guy's coming up at the cruiserweight division, so he may not be taking him or expecting to blow him out a lot quicker than you know, he's been. You know, Adamick is a tough guy. I got to admit, he's a tough guy. You know, and the first time in Adamick's career, I got to say that he's not going to be the pressure fighter. He's going to have to revert to doing something that he's not used to doing with his backpedal and box.
Yeah, well, I think he'd be smart to do that, don't you think? I mean, you know, he's got to stick, he's got to move, he's got to use his size. I mean, I think sometimes the mistake people make when they go up in weight is they try to add strength or pump up and try to become that weight class, as opposed to saying, well, I'm going to be smaller, so let me, you know, his punches are going to be tighter, his guard naturally, everything he does is a little bit tighter than what Chris throws. And so use that to your advantage. Be the smaller guy. Make it harder for Chris to get to you. Tire that fat ass out and take him into deep water. If that's what you can do, if that's what you think of Chris as a fighter, you know, he's going to maybe even need to either be like Teddy Atlas that says ad nauseum, all the way in or all the way out. You know, he's got to stay away out of that long range or get all the way onside on Chris. Because Chris can inside fight, no doubt, but – you know, I think you got to get to that body and really work it over. And the mid-range game will kill Adamick. I would stay away from it if I were him.
You know, and I got to go back into saying that, you know, thank you, Chris and Adamick, for making the heavyweight interesting and exciting again, because regardless of some people thinking that Adamick is going to be blown out, this is a tough challenge for Adamick, and it's a tough challenge for Chris, in my opinion, to take on a cruiserweight guy that really, you know, has been beaten by fast guys, not pressure guys, you know. So this is a interesting fight. I'm going to go with my correspondent guys? Who's, huh?
Did you say fat guys or fast guys?
Fast guys.
Not that guy.
Polish American Justin Strikehart, who's got a bunch of other stuff mixed in the mix there with him and all that. Go ahead, brother. What's your take about Adamick and versus Oriella?
I wish I could say I think Adamick has a really good chance, but I just don't. I don't see it. I don't really see the game plan that he could pull off. I mean, he could try and box Chris Areola. It's just something that I really haven't seen too much from Adamek. He is a pressure fighter. He is a guy who looks to hurt you with his punches. He tries to make them really count, and I don't think they're going to count so much against Areola. Areola, on top of that fact, he's like a more rare heavyweight who could throw 4 and 5 punch combinations on you. I just don't see Adamek really lasting the whole 12 rounds. Like that, I think he's going to get. Let's just say hypothetically, he finds a way to be up on scorecards. It's not going to matter for my book anyway, because I don't think he's going to be able to make it all the way to the end with Areola. So I don't know. I'll think about it some more, but I haven't come up with a way where Adamek wins the fight. I don't
Absolutely.
Have a game plan.
You know, man, I definitely want to give in my prediction about it, but I'm going to wait on it. But I tell you what, we got to get into the Stand and Fight rundown news really quick. I know we see some fight fans calling in. Just hold off for a minute, and we'll chime you right in to talk about a little bit what we've been discussing. And, you know, if you have a topic or a question, we'll definitely patch you in. But let's go real quick with the news. We just had the King, David Estrada, on, who had his defeat over once unbeaten, 26-0 and 18 KOs, Orlando Lora. He beat him. It was a great, sensational win for him on ESPN2 Saturday night. Now, I went to the Tosche Palace in Lemoore, California. Heavyweight Matt Casado, who we had on 2 weeks ago, you know, was looking to get past Jason Garvin, but unfortunately he lost a split decision to a very game veteran. The guy, really honestly, you can see the fight on YouTube, on Guzman Tudor's YouTube channel. It was a good, exciting heavyweight fight. You know, Kinsella obviously fought the wrong fight. He waited too long, and he allowed Jason Garvin to do what he needed to do, which was be the faster, be first into the ring. Michael Dallas Jr., the junior welterweight, undefeated guy that's been helping out Manny Pacquiao, he KOs his opponent with a jab in the first round, knocks the guy down twice in the first round. The ref jumps in and stops the bout at a 2 minute and 55 second mark on the first round. Now, going back to Antonio Margarito, returns May 8th against on a pay-per-view Latin Fury 14 to face Robert Garcia, and Antonio Margarito is training out of Oxnard, California, who's being trained by Robert Garcia, not the opponent, different Robert Garcia, champion, once champion Robert Garcia. Now, on George Lopez tonight, Sugar Shane Mosley and Oscar De La Hoya were on, and George Lopez asked Mosley, can you knock out Floyd? Mosley stated, definitely. Lopez asked, will you knock out Floyd? Mosley stated, I will knock out Floyd. Man, he's making the fight more interesting. I can't win. I'm so pumped up about the May 1st time. There's so many good things happening in boxing right now. You know, as a fight fan, you cannot complain about what's happening in the boxing world. Joey Gilbert returns to the ring at the in Reno, Nevada. Grand Sierra Casino, May 22nd on the Let's Get It On Promotions. Brandon Gonzalez is on the undercard. This Saturday night, April 17th, Cali Pavlik versus Sergio Martinez, plus Lucian Boutte versus Edison Miranda at the Atlantic City Boardwalk. You don't want to miss that. Holyfield, legend Holyfield, gets past Botha in 8 rounds. So that's you got that there. Berto TKO's Quintana on the 8th. Caballero has a 12-1 decision over previously unbeaten Yorianan on scores of 119-108, 120-109, 118-108. There goes that news right there. You can hear me crumbling it. All right, now, Mosley, Mayweather pay-per-view undercard. You're going to have 19-year-old Mexican welterweight contender Saul Canelo Alvarez. He's going to be facing off with older brother Jose Miguel Cotto in a 10-round bout. Former champion Daniel Bons de Leon, he'll be matched up with Cornelius Locke, a slick southpaw. I think he's a southpaw, Gable. Am I right about that? Is that the same Locke that I'm thinking of?
Cornelius Locke?
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yep, in a 10-round bout. Okay, you know, we got to make an announcement. Lorena Trajan had passed away, so our condolences out to the family about her pass away. You know, it's always sad to hear a person that's been involved in boxing, anybody that's involved in boxing, pass away, so our condolences out to her. Timothy Bradley, the Desert Storm, with his fight with Marcos Miedana, has been postponed. It was scheduled for June 19th at the Agua Caliente Casino Resort. However, it's been canceled due to an injury to Miedana. Now, there is a possible day in July. It's being considered. It hasn't been sat down. It's not solid, okay? Three-time world champion Miguel Cotto is training in Tampa, Florida, with new trainer Emmanuel Stewart. Cotto has a fight coming up against Yuri Foreman, June 5th, at the Yankee Stadium. I'm a little curious about what Emmanuel Stewart is going to bring to Miguel Cotto. Is that losing streak, that stigma of curse that Emmanuel Stewart, is it going to hover over Miguel Cotto, or is Miguel Cotto going to be able to be redeemed and look like a much fresher, prepared fighter getting in with the big, big man at 154, Yuri Foreman? Once again, Brian Hawaiian, the Punch, Valerio returns since losing his to a Colombian fighter, Carlos Tamra, back in January. And the opponent has not been announced. Valerio is said to return to the ring in June in the Philippines. Filipinos, stand up. I don't know if you guys heard about Adam Carolla, you know, making some jokes and terrible, man. Terrible. Saying some things about Manny Pacquiao, praying to bones, chicken bones, and also saying that, is that all you got, Philippines, is Manny Pacquiao and sex tours? The comedian and radio personality tweeted an apology, but Pinos are not accepting it. They have stated that they're asking all Filipinos and non-Filipinos to send some chicken bones to the office of Adam Carolla. Now, there's some rap songs now about Adam Carolla, but really honest, I don't know if they want my chicken bones, Gabriel, because they, my chicken is with mole, you know? Chicken mole and all that's going to be kind of dirty, brother. You know, I don't know if they want all that, man. But anyways, there you go on our Stand and Fight news. So let's pass it to some fight fans, man, and see what they got to say about what's going on in the boxing world. And then we'll give up our predictions about the Sergio Martinez and Cali Patrick fight. So I'm going to go with the area code 843, brother. What's on your mind? You're live on Leave It in the Ring.
What's happening? What's happening, fellas?
What's up, brother?
Yes, I believe Pallet's going to stop him late. I think it's going to be, 9-10 maybe. But I think Pallet's going to stop him. You know, I think Butte should take Miranda, but that dude, you never know. I mean, Goosen might have gotten his head and got him on the right path. He looked pretty good in the last one, but Butte will probably take him. Who knows? He's a monster.
And, you know, you're right. You know, Joe Goosen has put him under his wing, and the last time I saw Miranda was at the Chelsea Palace, Lemoore, California, and he did look great, but he fought a guy that really honestly, you know, wasn't tested out of Mexico and knocked him out in the first round. Interesting to see what Miranda brings. He does have that puncher's chance, but Butte knocked out a guy that a lot of people believed couldn't be knocked out, and did it in great, great fashion with a body shot, which surprised a lot of people. And I think that Butte having an ultra high right now over that win on a guy that he originally had problems with the first time around and gets him out of there in a lot quicker and in much greater fashion, I think he's such high up on the road right now and in a different mountain level. I just find it really hard to see Miranda be successful. Gabriel, what do you think?
You know, I think he's got a decent puncher's chance. They've done some different things with him, and they've at least had one fight and a whole lot of camps. They had a camp where they were going to do a fight in Europe, and then they postponed it because Miranda was ill. And legitimately, he was ill. I talked with his trainer, and the guy was sick. He wasn't mm-hmm. faking. So they had a long time to kind of retool him. You're going to expect to see him box a little more. He's not going to ever be Pernell Whitaker. You know, he's not even going to be a poor man's Pernell. But he's using his jab a little bit more to set up the right hand. I don't know if, you know, you remember he'd always kind of like hold his right hand and kind of shake it a little bit or hold it real tight, tense to his chest before he'd throw it. And he doesn't do that as much anymore. Maybe he will in the fight, but what I've observed of him, what little I've observed of him, he seems a little smoother, a little more relaxed. But Butte, you know, he's as good a boxer as they come, man. He can move very well. Southpaw guy, he's fast. I think the Andrade fight, the first one, kind of woke him up a little bit and made him tighten up his game, and you saw what happened in their rematch. But, you know, if Andrade can get to him late in the fight, I definitely think that Miranda can get to him. I'm picking Butte, but I wouldn't be surprised if Miranda shocked us a little bit and made more of a fight out of it than people are giving him credit for.
916 Chris, man, what's your pick about that fight with Butte? You think that he takes him out early, takes him out late, or he loses to a guy that definitely does have a puncher chance and at one time was considered a very dangerous man in middleweight before getting in the ring with Kelly Pavlik?
I'm seeing a replay of Miranda versus Andre Ward, except for I think Butte has more on his punches than Andre Ward has. So, and Butte's been showing a... You know, you saw in the Andrade fight, and I believe the fight before that, he might have stopped the guy with the body shot. So I don't know how good Miranda could take it to the body or not at 168. I don't know. Miranda, I just think his best days are behind him. I think that the Kelly Pavlik fight and the second Abraham fight may have taken a little bit out of him. He took a pretty good shellacking in both those fights. So I expect Butte's speed to give him a ton of trouble, and I think Butte's going to take him apart and probably TKO him in under 10.
Yeah, I see the same thing, except for I think it'll end even earlier. He did knock out the previous opponent basically with a body shot. The referee did wave it off, but there was no way he was going to recover. It was a very devastating body shot in the same exact round four. I think Edison Miranda be lucky to make it much past six rounds. And, you know, he's just not – I mean, we all know he has a puncher's chance, but as far as the rest of it goes, he doesn't have a – he doesn't – if Boutte fights the right fight, there's no way he can't win this fight. And I think he is going to go take a knockout.
One more thing, go ahead, man. Sorry. I understand that all the top 168ers are tied up in the Super 6 for the most part, but really, what did Miranda do to earn this shot? I would have rather seen Saki Obika here. I don't know if it's just a showcase fight, but if it is, why is it
Saki Obika?
I can tell you why that is, because Lucien Boutte already beat Saki Obika a couple years ago. So, I mean, that, I was just going to get into that, as a matter of fact, because as Boutte is sitting on, you know, the top of a mountain here, he can just basically sit on relatively easy title defenses. I think they're just going to try and find him people with a recognizable name to hold him over until there's a winner of the Super 6 and then have a humongous fight. I think Lucien Boutte, even if it was unplanned, is a genius for not entering that tournament. Even if he was to lose to the winner, it makes him second place already, no matter what. And he didn't even have to get into the tournament. Genius.
Well, yeah. It's pretty damn smart. It's like, let them all kind of fight each other. Almost how Floyd, when he took his retirement, and you had like Mosley and Cotto fight each other, and everybody kind of beat the hell out of each other, and then he comes back, all right, let me take the winner of all that, who's got some miles on him, we're going to make a ton of money, and it's just the safest thing I could do. It's smart, you know, that they say. It's not a sport. It's a series of individual business transactions, and the smartest guy ultimately gets the most toys.
Absolutely. And then you also got to remember about Bika is that he does have a purse bid that was picked up to fight Brinkley. And they had 90 days to get that fight set up together. So he may be a little tied up. That's why maybe the other reason why he didn't get in with Boutte.
So much for me doing my research.
It's all good, man. Bika is a guy who could take anybody at 168, so a rematch wouldn't necessarily be uninteresting at all.
Right, definitely. You know, we're even – yeah, you're right. Well, the headline is going to be Cali Pavlik versus Sergio Martinez, so I'm going to go with Chris 916 really quick. What's your take about that fight, brother? Who wins it?
Man, I'm so intrigued by this fight. My favorite to win the fight is Sergio Martinez. I thought he looked tremendous in the Paul Williams fight, more so the fact that he was a late replacement. He kind of got tired down the stretch, but I think that's because he didn't have a full camp. He took the shots well, although Paul Williams doesn't have the power in his hands that Kelly the Ghost Pavlik has of 160. You know, Kelly's been out for a while. He did fight Espino in December. I think that was more of just a, you know, get back in there, shake the rust off fight. But I'm still worried about how that timeout has affected him, how, you know, the staff injury may have affected his hand. Kelly's pretty flat-footed, you know, for the most part. He's got a solid jab, which can neutralize Martinez's speed. But I don't know, man. Martinez just looks so good lately, in my opinion. And I just think that his speed and his movement's going to give Kelly Pavlik a lot of trouble, a lot of angles, too, you know, similar to what Bernard Hopkins did. Granted, Bernard Hopkins roughed Kelly up on the inside, something Sergio's probably not going to want to do. I don't think he's going to get in there. But as long as he doesn't get hurt by any of Pavlik's big punches, I see Sergio winning a decision here, unanimous decision, but I do think it's going to be a close competitive fight, but I do think Sergio's going to outbox him over 12.
Gabriel Montoya, what you got, brother? Who takes this fight and why?
You know, man, I'm going with the upset special. I'm going with Martinez. And I think some people are thinking off of the Bernard Hopkins fight that isn't the upset special, but it is. Martinez is a smaller guy. He's been stopped before by Margarito, actually pre-Capatillo Margarito, very early on in his career. I think he was like 15-0. But he's learned. He's understood himself. He's got a lot of fights now, I think 40-plus, almost 50 fights. You know, he really knows exactly how to win. He's not afraid to stink out the joint, and I think he's going to have to do that a little bit. I don't think that, you know, Kelly can say he was sick. I know he was injured coming into the fight, and it was not very – much at the top of his game against Bernard Hopkins. He was also two weight classes out, so we kind of just throw that fight out the window, other than the fact that he doesn't deal with angles well, he doesn't deal with speed very well, who does? And nobody deals well with southpaws. So I think if Martinez can keep it center of the ring, keep him turning, and not get greedy, throw two or three shots, get out of there, and rinse and repeat. I think he takes a split decision. That's my pick.
Strike card, brother. What you got, brother?
Just to show how unbiased I am, because I know back a little while ago we did our most overrated fighters, and mine was Kelly Pavlik, and I would stick by that to this day, but I am going to pick Kelly Pavlik to win this fight by knockout. I think that what it comes down to for me is, at its simplest, Sergio Martinez probably could outbox him, but he does take risks, you know. He isn't afraid to stink out the joint, but he is a guy who takes a lot of risks in order to get done the work he wants to get done. Whereas Bernard Hopkins, in the past 5 years or so, hasn't touched a risk with a 10-foot pole. So I think, you know, pretty soon, at some point in the fight, he's going to come across a right hand that puts him on the canvas. And I would point to his record as something. I know Sergio Martinez has excited us all recently, but prior, his record is riddled with very questionable opponents. He really has only had one fight at middleweight, and it was against a junior middleweight at that in Paul Williams. It was two junior middleweights fighting at middleweight because of the fact that it was a late replacement. So he's obviously not proven at middleweight. He did take a lot of punches from Paul Williams, and I think if he takes anywhere near the amount of punches on the face against Kelly Pavlik, it's not going to be good. I think it's a 10-round knockout for Pavlik, who has had a terrible middleweight reign, shameful. So, yeah, that's my pick.
Okay, well, I'm going to give you my pick really quick, and I'll break it down and what I think is going to happen in this fight. I got to agree with a lot of the stuff that you guys are saying. Sergio Martinez, to me, going up and fighting Paul Williams, like you just mentioned, is not a guy that moved up in that weight, came from 147, and saw that he did have problems with Kermit Cintrone. He did have problems with Paul Williams in the later stage of the fight. So that leaves me with Kelly Pavlik. Can Kelly Pavlik continue doing what he did in the past, which is chase down the faster guy, a guy that obviously is going to have more special effects against him and be able to corner him like the way he did to Jermaine Taylor? I'm going to have to stick to say yes. But being that Kelly Pavlik has not been active with really honestly good fighters out there that we can really sit down and applaud and pat his back, that could come into play, because Sergio Martinez is coming off of the high note of his career. And when you see a guy that kind of comes in with a, you know, it's like that old saying, when a guy becomes champion, he moves to a different level. That could be the case where Sergio Martinez could be at, is, you know, seeing what he's done and having the fan back him up, and fans, you know, say, hey, you know what, let's take a look at this guy. This guy is the real deal. It could be a boost, but sometimes a balloon can be blown up too much, where then when you touch it, it pops. And I think that's what's going to happen with Sergio Martinez when he gets in with Kelly Pavlik in Atlantic City, that he's going to have his moments in the early round until Kelly gets, he gets strong in the later rounds, and he's going to be able to catch up with them. Going back with Gabriel Montoya said, mentioned a little bit about Bernard Hopkins, is you're right. You know, Bernard Hopkins gave the blueprint of how to beat him. The only problem with that is that Bernard Hopkins was a much bigger man and was able to hold him off and really tire him out by tying him up, where Sergio's a little bit smaller and I don't think he's going to be able to hold him off and tie him up as much and be as successful as Bernard Hopkins was. So
he's not even going to try, man. He's cagier. He likes to move, you know? So it's not the same. Yeah.
But would I be surprised if Sergio Martinez wins? I would not be surprised. But I tell you what, if he does win, he has made the middleweight division a lot more interesting.
Yes, possibly, but if you remember when we had him on the show like a month or two ago, he said if he was to take these titles, if it was up to him and his promoter didn't say otherwise, he would just go back down to 154 and try and unify titles there. So how exciting is that, really?
Well, yeah, you're right. You know, he did say that, but, you know, I think it's all because of, you know,
there
are
like
unbusiness business.
Either.
What's that, Gabe?
There isn't a hell of a lot at 160. You know, it's kind of a wasteland a little bit, so I don't really blame him. I mean, there's a lot more going on at 154 right now than there is at 160.
Yeah,
but,
it makes
offers a fight, you take it, you know.
But listen, this is what it does. If he becomes a middleweight champion of the world, it makes the little guys, 154 guys, go, hey, you know what? Let's jump up because this guy's not that big.
That's true. It does. It does open up a different avenue. That's for damn sure. Yeah.
You know,
it would make for a good storyline as far as a rematch with Paul Williams goes. That would spoil the whole let's get Kelly Pavlik and Paul Williams back in the ring together, which it seems like is the storyline here. It would be more, okay, now we need a rematch between Paul Williams and Sergio Martinez.
Or what it does too is make Kelly Pavlik and Paul Williams get it on. And the winner gets Sergio Martinez if Sergio Martinez is successful. But you know, hey, we all have dreams. Hopefully something happens that that we can really honestly be happy and proud about. I'm gonna go ahead and patch in some fight fans really quick. Area code 619. You're on Leave It in the Ring, brother. What's on your mind? What do you want to talk about?
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, Dave, what's up, man? This is Damon from San Diego.
Damon, what's up, brother? What's going on, man? What's on, my brother?
I just real quick, I know you got a lot of callers, but one fight with Martinez Pavlik, I'm going to go with Pavlik on that.
Okay.
I think everybody wants to pump up Sergio, but I think he's more of the hype. I mean, the Williams and remember, Williams lost to Quintana the first time.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I kind of see that the same kind of way. I think if they were to fight again, I think Williams would do a lot better job the second go around. Sometimes those guys that step in, a lot of times they do a lot better than people expect. I think Pavlik's gonna be too big and too strong, and I'm looking for a late knockout myself.
You're not the only one, brother. You're not the only one. Let me ask you this, because I want to kind of move in and about going back into the heavyweights. Look, it's something that a topic that we normally would never talk about, but the heavyweights have been doing some stuff out there enough to generate to get some breath of air out of us hardcore fight fans. Is Holyfield successful over Botha, gets a bout, another bout? Where does it put Holyfield? Should we make him retire? Or does it get him a shot at any of the title lists out there? Because he's already said he's not looking to fight anybody else unless they have a title.
Yeah, I mean, you got to give a brother his credit. I mean, he's hanging in there and doing. I mean, and actually, he beat the Dollar Death, how you say his name? He beat him the first time. They didn't want to give him that decision. So he would have had two belts. So. You gotta give him credit. He might as well. I think he should go ahead and bow on out. Though he's kind of, he should just leave his legacy where it is. Let these youngsters, go ahead and take the reign.
Well, that's something he's definitely not gonna do. Hey, Damon, brother, thanks you for calling in, brother. On
All right, you're
the
welcome,
ring,
brother.
Man. He's definitely not going to do that, and if you haven't heard the interview that we conducted with him, you can go to leavingtheringat.com and check out the audio of Holyfield. He does talk about David Haye, and he does mention Mike Tyson, and he talks about all the other heavyweights and about Tommy the Morrison making his comeback. But Gable Montoya, where does it put Holyfield right now in the mix in the heavyweight division?
Hopefully the retirement home. The guy is, he beat Francois Botha. I mean, let's not – yeah, he won a fight. But, I mean, come on. BoxRec doesn't even put Botha – it puts him at ranked 117 in the world. That's 116 guys better than him. Evander Holyfield is one of those guys. But the man is 47. And I really don't – I'm a bloodthirsty savage, like Steve Kim likes to say. I love blood and guts. I love to see guys beat the hell out of each other. Castillo Corrales and Hagler Hearns are – my two favorite fights of all time. But this man's 47 years old, and what's it going to take for people to say, look, there's a shelf life for these guys? This is bottom line. This is entertainment. You know, we like watching people fight for money and beat the hell out of each other and push the limits of the human body and the human will over the edge sometimes. I get that. You know, I do this for a living, but I don't want to watch Evander Holyfield fight anymore. You know, I just don't. I think that if David Haye fought him or the Klitschko's fought him, they should be ashamed of themselves. Yeah, he's winning. I did think he beat Valuev, but let's be honest. It was a horrible fight. He probably landed about 100 punches in 12 rounds. His whole game plan was to not engage, and Valuev was never very good to begin with, other than being 7'5" and, you know, 450 pounds, whoever the hell he is. I mean, let's just be real. You know, I don't want to see him in the mix. I don't want to see him get knocked the hell out like Joe Lewis did against Marciano. And we go, yeah, you're right, he is done. He's done. He's 47. It's just, you know, I don't want to deny a man a living. But, dude, you know, I also don't want to see a man get denied his life.
You know, you may be right. You're right. But, you know, he was very adamant about saying, hey, I'm in the best shape of my life. You know, I'm going to prove it with both of them. But all the things that you said right now are valid points, Gabriel, and I think you're not the only one that feels that way about Holyfield trying to make his mission on becoming a unified world champion. I have to say that I don't think it's ever going to happen. But I want to make a quick announcement. For all the listeners that are listening right now, you might want to get your pencil out because this announcement is going to relate to the Sugar Shane Mosley and Floyd Mayweather fight. And it's also going to relate to our roundtable happening this Sunday at 2 o'clock, Al Bernstein, Teddy Atlas, among Max Garcia, who is part of the Shea Mosley camp, out there helping out. There's going to be a lot of people, guests and callers. We're giving away 4 Mosley Mayweather tickets on Sunday, 2 o'clock. You have to be the first 50th caller to call in to win 2 pairs of tickets. Then you have to be the 100th caller to call in to get 2 more tickets. Okay, so you want to call in on Sunday, April 18th at 2 o'clock. Listen to the roundtable. It's going to be a 3-hour show. We're going to be breaking down who wins the fight. We're going to be talking to experts and people that are in the game behind the scenes about their take, who's going to win that fight. So if you want to win some tickets to the May 1st to possibly see Sugar Shane Mosley beat or upset Floyd or see Floyd do another masterpiece over Shane, you have to call in on a Sunday show. Hey, you know what? We got to roll into Chris's MMA because he has his guest on the line. So, Chris, he comes in your intro music, brother, before you start interviewing your guest that right now in the MMA world.
Have you ever asked yourselves in an hour of meditation, which everyone finds during the day, how long we have been striving for greatness? It is a privilege to fight!
We are warriors!
It is pledged that the winner will allow the loser to hold a proper funeral ritual.
There are no paths between lions and men.
Sir, you got a war face! Take the war face! Now let me see your war face! Oh, you didn't convince me! Let me see your real war face!
So I think we have my guest on the line, Dave.
Yes, we do.
All right. How's it going? First off, I don't want to get your name wrong. So could you pronounce your name for me?
It's Hike.
Hike. All right, man. Hi. So I see you got your first professional MMA, your debut on May 6th. At this point, you know, the fight's coming up. Are you more nervous or anxious for this fight?
I just can't wait for this fight, man. Honestly, I'm not nervous at all because I'm pretty confident in myself. I'm just ready for this, man. I can't wait. Nervous at all.
I was reading your bio today on, you know, the website, and it was saying that your dad was a wrestler when you were younger, and you took karate. I mean, fighting wasn't really popular like it is now back then. But at the time, like, which discipline do you think is better to train now that you're going to be in mixed martial arts? Karate or wrestling? What do you think the better base or foundation?
Honestly, there's no just right or wrong answer for this question. To be able to fight in mixed martial arts, you have to know all of them. You can't just be a karate guy and go out there and fight. You can't just be a wrestler and go out there and fight. You have to know how to mix all of them, man. That's the beauty of this sport. That's why this sport keeps going. It's more entertaining, you know?
Yeah. Is there anything that, like, you can learn from your dad, from his wrestling? Because I know you did martial arts, like, strictly karate for a long time, but now that you are getting into all, you know, the all disciplines of it, is there anything your dad can show you, like, from his wrestling days that's beneficial for you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, since I was a little kid, my dad was a wrestler. I trained karate, but at the same time, he would always work on me, on my wrestling and everything. Now that I'm doing mixed martial arts, I mean, yeah, he still shows me some moves and everything. It helps me to have better balance while I'm standing up and everything. So it's very important, yeah. Very helpful.
Yeah, I see where you also mentioned that, you know, when you're a teenager, your mom kind of didn't approve of your fighting, so you stopped doing it for a while just for her approval and stuff. But what about your dad? Does he support it, or is he behind you in regards to, you know, your mixed martial arts career?
The fun thing, I mean, my dad first, I mean, he has a love for sport, but he wanted me to continue my education and everything. I mean, I still go to college and everything. I am going to continue my education. But then when they see that I have the love for the sport, I mean, there's no way I'm just going to let this go. They're going to support me. My dad does support me right now. He's got my back all the way.
Do you think if you hadn't have moved to the United States, if your family had stayed in Armenia, do you still think you would have taken this same career or career path?
I think I was just going to be left alone with my karate. I mean, I was doing pretty good in karate. I became, like, Armenian champion for 4 years in a row. I was getting ready to go to Russian tournaments, all kind of tournaments. But MMA was, there is no MMA over there. Not real organization, nothing like that. All I would do is just watch it on TV and everything and just dream one day maybe I'll be lucky to get in there, you know?
Yeah, you know, actually I want to follow up that question. You know, there are some Armenian fighters which are becoming a lot more popular nowadays. You know, you got Gegard Mousasi, you got Karo Parisian, Manny Gamborian, and more recently, Karin Dabidian.
Yes.
With these guys, I mean, I'm sure you know all these guys. With their popularity and with their, you know, just their presence, do you think the sports are going to become more popular over in Armenia?
Well, yeah, obviously. I mean, this sport grew a lot. I mean, like, if you look back a couple years ago, my people didn't know much about MMA, you know. They were just were interested about boxing and everything. But now, since we have some good fighters, like you mentioned, Karin Darabedian, we got Karo Parisian, Gegard Mousasi, all those Manny Gamborian, and many more. I mean, right now, people are starting to get to know us, and this sport grows in our community as well, too. And I'm just happy to be able to train with these guys every day.
Because there's not a lot of Armenian fighters just yet in MMA. Is there kind of like a more of a bond between you guys because there are so few of you at this point?
Well, yeah, right now we're like a family. When we go to gym, we're like brothers, all of us together, man. We help each other out. We're like family. There is the bond. We got each other's back all the time.
Right. Now, what weight class are you going to be competing in?
I'm going to be fighting at 135 weight class.
135. So 135, yeah. I mean, everyone that, you know, is big martial arts, mixed martial arts fans, no, 135 is primarily like the top fighters in 135 are fighting in the WEC. So is that a goal of yours to eventually make it to the WEC?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much one of my biggest goals. I mean, I'm just starting right now. It's going to be my pro debut on May 6th. So I'm hoping like to get some good fights. Maybe if I go like four or five in a row, I hope I'll get a chance at WEC. That's one of my goals right now.
Who are you training with right now? Are you training with any names that anyone would know, or like what camp are you working with?
I currently train at Main Event Gym and HK Golden Boys. That's my wrestling place, and Main Event Gym is where I do my stand-up boxing training. I train with Karin Darabedian, names you mentioned. Sometimes Gilad Mousasi stops by our gym. We train with him. I train with Manny Gamborian daily. Jerry Topazian, you heard of him. He's also going to be on a fight card. Sevak Mugakian, like some big names over there, and we all train together.
That's a pretty good group of guys to surround yourself with heading in your first fight. Do you know anything about your opponent yet?
Can you repeat the question again, please?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I said, do you know anything about your opponent?
Well, I just know about him. His name is Chris Wolf. I know he likes to stand up. He's a karate guy. I really don't know much about him. I just saw one of his videos. And, yeah, I mean, he seems like a decent fighter, but I'm excited to take the fight, you know? I'm ready for this.
Since he's a karate guy and, you know, you have this long, you know, you did karate for so long, what kind of fighting style do you look to employ?
I'm confident both ways. If the fight goes on the ground, I'm confident. If the fight just stays stand up, I'm still confident. So I'm just going to go forward with the intentions to finish the fight as soon as possible. And I'm just going to make sure, like, I mean, be really careful. As soon as he makes some mistakes, I'm going to take advantage of the mistake and just finish the fight. It doesn't matter where it goes.
Right. All right, I have one last question for you. And this is a question, you know, I guess you can answer however, you know, it just comes to you. What do you like the most about fighting? What makes you want to do this for a living?
It's not much that I want to do this for a living. It's just the love of sports. I mean, I love competing. That's just in me, you know? I just love the sport, and I love fighting. That's one of the sports I love, really.
Yeah, well,
I don't really know how to explain this.
Yeah, well, I definitely think, you know, if you do have a love for something, it's probably best to pursue it, you know, and it's probably going to help you, you know. If you have a love for anyone that loves their work is definitely going to usually thrive in it, you know.
Well, now, obviously, you love something, you work hard, and obviously, you're going to achieve some good stuff in the future, and I hope that's what will happen to me.
Yeah, you know, hopefully. All right, man, well, I want to thank you for your time. Wish you luck on your debut, you know, and, you know, after it happens, hopefully, we can have you on again, you know, just tell us about the whole experience, you know, and what you thought of it all afterwards.
Thank you very much. And one last thing, man. Whoever's listening to this radio right now, I would like to invite all of them on May 6th to the King of the West Presents Rage Against the Bulls. It's going to be a great show, and we're going to have some MMA fights and also boxing fights. So all the fans out there, please go to kingofthewest.com, and they could see more info on that.
All right, man.
Thank
we'll
you
be
very
sure.
much. See you guys, too.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right.
Well, there you go. And then also who's going to be under that bill is Joseph Judah. And you're going to have Donnell Livingston, who's going to be making his pro debut. It's going to be at the Circus Disco, 6655 Santa Monica Boulevard, Hollywood, California. Go get your tickets at kingofthewest.com or call 818-314-9705. Again, I'm announcing really quick. We are going to be giving out 4 tickets for the Floyd Mayweather versus Sugar Shane Mosley. You have to be the 50th caller and 100th caller in order to receive 2 pair of tickets. You know, so you want to take out the old lady or just take out your homeboy. You go out there and enjoy the fights. Hopefully you get some either get upset or you just get a great, great fight. You know.
So you're going to let me finish doing my MMA rundown, or is that all I
get?
Yeah.
No. Go ahead, brother. I just wanted to throw that in just to make sure that the fight fans know about that. Go ahead. Do what you got to do.
All right, man. Real quick, I just wanted to mention last weekend. I wanted to mention UFC 112 from last weekend. I don't know if anyone – I doubt anyone on here saw it. I know Strikehearts didn't, but
I heard about it, and I read about it.
Yeah, well, you know what? Going into it, there were 2 championship bouts that everyone thought, myself included, I wrote on my preview on the blog – thought were going to be one-sided, and it turned out not to be the case. You know, lightweight champion BJ Penn lost a decision to his challenger Frankie Edgar, which was a really close fight. I've watched it a couple times now, and I'm still having trouble deciding it. But the main event, Anderson Silva, you know, considered pound for pound the best fighter in the sport, just dominated his opponent over 2 rounds, and then just pulled some clown act the last 3 rounds. I mean, he looked like Roy Jones in his prime, where Roy would just clown on opponents and toy with them, but even worse, at least Roy would, you know, hit a guy and, you know, do something. This guy just sat there and avoided the fight. There was no threat against him. It was really, really disappointing. You know, Dana White, president of the UFC, left halfway into the main event, just said he'd fire Anderson Silva if he ever put on a similar performance. It was just a bad look overall. I mean, I don't really understand what got into this guy. And it's
Chris,
let me ask you
this, you know, about Dana White, and he voiced – and Gable, I'd like to hear your thoughts about this, because Art from Stand and Fight mentioned this, and I honestly thought that this, you know, he was right about this. He said, that's what we need in boxing promoters, to finally admit when a fight is garbage, you know what I mean? To really get up there and say, man, this guy, I don't know what the hell is wrong with him. You know, he better not do this again. And Dana White, you got to take your hat off to the guy, because he stepped up and he admitted that this was a shitty fight.
Yeah, I mean, Dana does a lot of things that boxing promoters should do, you know, kind of taking the power out of the fighters' hands in a sense. I mean, they don't make the kind of money the boxing fighter, you know, boxers make. But at the same time, you know, his whole group is streamlined, you know, and it moves forward. You know, the fights end, and then they bring in the next guy and say, in the next pay-per-view, these 2 guys are going to fight, and they talk some shit, and then It's great. I appreciate that honesty from him. You know, I don't know the guy, so I don't know how 100% honest he is. I mean, he is a promoter, so by and large, I always kind of tend to think they're lying a little bit. But yeah, I thought it was great that he's came out and he's done it a couple times with Silva. It's like, look, you're the best fighter in the world. We kept marketing you that way, and then you stink out the joint. And I wish more people would do it instead of Bob Arum saying, you know, the event has a great undercard, and you know, and trying to convince me that that's actually true. You know, when my own two eyes are saying no, it's actually garbage. So
well,
yeah, it's refreshing.
You know, to follow up on that point, which you guys are speaking of, there was a fight last year for the light heavyweight championship, Lyoto Machida against Shogun Hua. And the majority of the fans and Dana White himself, the president, thought that Shogun won the fight, but the decision was given to Machida. What they do, they made an immediate rematch, which is coming up next month. So it seems it's been this case before, you know. If there's a controversial decision, he'll go ahead and make the rematch. It's not like boxing where they'll try to either deny the rematch, whether the promoter or the fighter, or it just never gets made. So he definitely does he's more of a fan-friendly type of promoter. So that is something that I can respect about Dana White's business practices. But anyways, yeah, it was just a bad night overall. You know, I kind of missed some of the pay-per-view and stuff. But moving on, this Saturday night on CBS network television, you got the Strikeforce event. You got three championship bouts. Lightweight champion Gilbert Melendez defending his title against a dream Japanese lightweight champion Shinya Aoki, a guy that viciously and intentionally broke his opponent's arm in his last fight and then went around flipping off the crowd and his opponent. So that guy's a mean little bastard, so look out for him. you got the light heavyweight fight against champion Gegard Mousasi, who I mentioned in the interview. He's an Armenian fighter, one of the best fighters, young fighters in the game, defending against King Mo Muhammad Lawal, who is an Olympic-caliber wrestler. He's a big boxing fan. The guy is an awesome showman. I mean, great ring walk, great trash talker, just a bull of a fighter. It's going to be an interesting matchup of styles. And in the main event, you got Jake Shields defending his middleweight title against Dan Henderson, who's been around for a long time. But he's one of the better fighters in the game. He's just, you know, another guy that's an Olympic-caliber wrestler, but he's got a serious right hand. So looking forward to that event. You know, it still does puzzle me that MMA is on network television and boxing is not. I mean, I definitely think boxing has at least of an audience, but, you know, I guess that's for another day. But after this show, if anyone's on the West Coast, 8 o'clock, Fox Sports Net, Bellator fighting on a live little tournament's going on as well. So that's the MMA fix for all you MMA junkies. Back to you, 97 Ruff.
And let's get back to the boxing junkies, man. It's great to be back. You know, it's when you're off for a week, you forget, you know, how fun this is to get on with the guys and talk about boxing and hear some of the fight fans. And, you know, I've seen a couple. I'm looking at the leavingtheringat@gmail.com account, and I see some guys are like, hey, can you guys lay off the Margarito, give the guy a chance? I think we did give him a chance. If you read Gabriel Montoya's article, he's given him a shot. He's understanding. I think we all, we just want some answers, you know. And let me say this, you know, we welcome any of Antonio Margarito's camp to Leave It in the Ring radio show. You know, talk to us, you know, because that's the only way, really, honestly, things can be cleared up is to talk it out. You know, let's find out what's going on. You know, we've heard, you know, a version of the story, but, you know, the people, I think the boxing fans want to hear, you know, from the horse's mouth, and that's definitely from Antonio Margarito or his camp. So, guys, more than welcome. You know, and it's not going to attack you on Leave It in the Ring. That's not what we're all about. But we do just got some questions, you know. And,
I have a question for you guys, for Gabe, Dave, Justin. I'm concerned, you know, not about the hand wraps, not how his offense is going to look, but Margarito took a pretty good beating in the Cotto fight. And even in the second Cintron fight, he took a lot of hits. I mean, granted, he ended up wearing Cintron tail, but he took a lot of damage. And then, of course, we know what happened in the Mosley fight. He looked flat in the fight even before it started. Whether that's what happened in the back, he was overtrained. I don't know what was going on. But do you guys think physically he just may be a little bit worn down? That maybe, if I know people are saying, you know, we're going to know if Margarito is cheating or not based on how he looks. But I'm a little concerned that he just isn't going to be the same fighter after his last few fights. I think physically he may just be a bit spent.
I'll jump in and I'll say, you know, with a fighter like him, a pressure fighter who I mean, doesn't protect his chin very well at all. It eventually does happen to all fighters like that. It's just that would be horrible for him if he wasn't cheating and then it did happen to him at this point in time, because that would certainly make him look like he was a cheater. So, but yeah, I mean, it could happen.
Well, you know, I gotta say, yeah, I kind of agree, because you know, taking shots like that, man, and if you look at another fighter that we talked about a little earlier, Lombardo, there's a guy that took hellacious shots and it finally caught up to him. So would Antonio Margarito could have caught up to him? Yeah, I think it might. You know, if he gets blown out, then we definitely are not going to get any answers, you know, out of the questions that we have. Gabriel? Oh, did we lose Gabriel? I think we did. Well, we lost Gabriel, but there goes my answer for that one, man. I mean, I think that's pretty much it. And
right.
But hey, listen, guys, you know, the show is about to be over, and definitely got to just make one more announcement again and say that, you know, on this April 18th on Sunday at 2 o'clock, we are having a Sugar Shane Mosley Floyd Mayweather roundtable. Al Bernstein and Teddy Atlas, along with ourselves and, you know, our new co-host, Gabriel Montoya, and Max Garcia, and Henry Ramirez will be on the line to discuss this upcoming fight. We are setting up some other people to get on and talk to us about their breakdown or prediction for the May 1st fight. And we also are giving out two pairs of tickets, one to the 50th caller and the next two pair of tickets to the 100th. caller, okay, to call in and get their pair of tickets, win their pair of tickets to go see the fight, to see whether or not Floyd Mayweather gets his first loss, or if Floyd Mayweather has another masterpiece against a legend fighter by the name of Sugar Shane Mosley. I'm your host, 97 Ruff. You had your host, Justin Strikehart, 916, writer Dave Chin with us, and you had Gabriel Montoya, who we just signed on to host with us, and is a great guy. Check out his articles, and be sure to go to Leave in the Ring and check out the articles and the details of the contest, okay? You guys have a good night, man. Talk to you guys all later.
Yep.
Adios, amigos.
Later.